Good morning, and welcome to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And I'm telling you something. Just what difference a couple of weeks can make from where we were. And we're going to have one beautiful day lined up for us today. It's nothing but sunshine. We're going to be in the 50s. And this is one of those days where I definitely want to encourage you to get out to your local garden centers and nurseries and just capture and take in what's going on. And Bob, good morning to you. What do you think about that with today's weather forecast and it making you want to get out and work in the
It's going to be a great day. I mean, it's going to be a great day. We, if you remember on our Facebook page, we had the countdown to spring. And you know what's nice about that countdown that we had?
Tell me about it.
It's done. We are on our first official Saturday of spring. It's going to be a gorgeous day. It's supposed to be a high of 55 and sunny. It's not. There's according to the Weather Channel, there's not a chance of rain at all today. It's supposed to be bright skies. Should be just absolutely wonderful.
Oh, I'm taking it in. That's all I'm going to tell you. We've been busy. What about you guys?
Oh, things are hopping. You know, it's been a little cool. But to be honest with you, don't you think this is a good thing? It doesn't look like we have any big giant heat wave coming. It looks like a nice steady 50s, 60s. You know, a little cooler at night, a little rain here and there.
I like it.
Normal spring would be great. I mean, last year, remember, I think it was March was warm and April was cold.
Well, I have one for you.
What's that?
I looked at my some of my photographs last year. March 21st, we had about 3 or 4 inches of snow. Did you know that?
I did not.
Yes. It's just how different things can be from one year to the next.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, that is absolutely amazing that we had snow. And didn't we have some flurries in April, too?
That I don't know. We'll probably have flurries next Thursday. It's opening day.
Yeah, I know. It's always cold on opening day. Are you excited about the Reds?
I am. I'm stoked. As a matter of fact, I'm going.
You are? You're going
to opening day? Yeah, it's 150th opening day.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. 150th year right here. Cincinnati baseball.
Really?
Is that Alex, you got to dig in there and find that for us when you get a chance.
Yeah, I'd like to know if that's true.
You have sports connections. Get on it, brother.
You know what? Cincinnati sports is pretty good right now. Unfortunately, the Bearcats fell yesterday, and that busted my bracket because I'm a Bearcat fan. So I was kind of leading, you know, kind of picking my teams with my heart on some of it. And so that one's going to cost me quite a bit. But, you know, NKU went out. You know, they fought hard. They went out. We still got Kentucky. They play today, I think.
What time do they play today?
I'm not sure. I haven't looked that close at it. But, you know, Cincinnati sports is fun. You got the Reds getting ready to opening day. I mean, FC Cincinnati. Did you see some of those pictures?
No, I did not.
The people, the Bailey walking down the street coming into the, oh my gosh, let's see if we can find any.
I think they had, what, 36,000 in attendance? Was that right?
Unbelievable. And you know what? Soccer's huge. And I'm glad it's another professional sport. It's a big sport in our area. There's a lot of people that love soccer. And, you know, so if the Reds can be successful, and I'm excited about the Bengals, even though I know they're not going to do anything until September, you know. New coach, new atmosphere. I think Cincinnati sports are going to be good.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Hi, Alex.
Good. Doing great. So the Reds will be opening their 150th anniversary.
Cool.
You want to throw the first pitch?
I wish I could.
Wouldn't that be awesome? I would do that in a heartbeat. Around the house first pitch. If anybody from the Reds are listening, we're more than welcome. We'll volunteer for that position. I would love to do that.
Boy, I don't think we rank. I don't think we can pull that one off.
You don't think you can throw a strike?
You know, I think I could. I really do. I used to pitch.
I can throw short distances. I've thrown so much BP because I coached my son's team for so many years. And, you know, I mean, I've thrown so much ball to all these kids. And because we'd start in February and start in the cages and start getting them ready, I cannot throw like I used to. My shoulder, I think it's just wore out.
As long as you don't throw like a sissy.
I don't do that, but I don't throw hard anymore. There's nothing hard. I can't throw any you know, 90-mile-an-hour fastball. I'd be more like a Greg Maddux, a junk ball pitcher right now.
You know, speaking of baseball, I believe the gentleman's name, the new groundskeeper, Stephen Lord.
Yeah.
And, we need to come up with a way and get in touch with that guy.
I would love to sit down with him and find out how they, because I know they do the perennial rye blends, I think, and I'd love to know how the mowing habits, the fertilizer habits that he does, and their maintenance and what that takes, because I know what a yard takes.
Well,
different.
I can tell you that Doug Gallant, the former groundskeeper, when I was down there on the field, beautiful field, by the way, he had told me, this was a few years ago, that they do, or they did, a five-way rye blend.
Okay.
Okay. They do not use Scott's Miracle-Gro fertilizer.
Even though they sponsor them.
I want to chuckle there.
Yeah.
You know, quite a bit of maintenance is involved with that field. And, you know, it doesn't take long to get ryegrass germinated and up on the field.
Yeah.
You can pre-germinate it.
And it's always green, so obviously they're fertilizing heavy. You know, I'm sure the grounds crew loves when there's a Western road trip by the Reds. It gives them a chance for nobody to be on the field and really get it back under control. But if anybody knows how to contact him, I'd love to have a sit down with him or have him come in the studio.
Let's
just talk
you and
about
I
things.
Next week one day take it upon ourselves just to go on over there and see if we can get in and introduce ourselves.
Do you know who we are? And security will go, we don't care. Get out of here. You guys are nobodies.
You know, this is opening day week. Get out of here.
But I am excited about the Reds. I really am excited about the Reds.
Tell me how excited you are.
I am. I mean, we got, you know, Joey Votto's still always an all-star. You know, he gets a bad rap, but he's an all-star sometimes, and sometimes the fans are hard on him. But year after year after year, he always is producing with the bat. I mean, he's always a 300-plus hitter, RBIs. You know, I think he's lost some power since he had all his ankle injuries, but I'm excited about
it. Anyway, we need to get down there. We need to check out the field because when I think of the perennial rye versions that they pull together and, mm-hmm. and make happen down there, it's a beautiful turf. I understand, and I want to talk a little bit about grass seed this morning. And
right.
Since we're talking about Great American Ballpark, this might be a good lead in.
It is.
But I don't know if you know this or not, if you've ever heard this, and maybe you can shed some light on it. I understand that it's very difficult to get a rye grass to come in just by itself, one variety alone. Have you ever heard that before?
I haven't, because years and years and years ago, there used to be one called Penfind.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that one,
Penfind? No, I don't.
P-E-N-N-F-I-N-E. So it's Penfind. That's
Penfind.
All Grandpa.
Okay.
When I was a kid, I would go, and part of my job was to bag 5-pound, 3-pound, 1-pound bags for Grandpa.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd dump it in a big old bin out of a, you know, one of those 50-pound bags. And I would weigh each individual one, wrap them up, label them, and put them on the shelf. And he used to sell only perennial rye Penfind grass. And I can tell you for a fact that was an old time. That was a great seed. It grew no matter where you threw it. And if it was warm because
so,
it's perennial
so,
rye, it
so
grew
it,
fast.
So it would come in pretty thick and, you know, solid.
If you
really
did the right amount, like you do with the fescues, it was a fantastic seed. Now, it did require a little extra fertilization, which a ryegrass, we all know, requires a little bit more maintenance than some of our turf fescues. So we did fertilize it a little more often.
Mm-hmm. Then why do you think that ryegrasses really aren't? Is that the reason why you don't see as many or as much rye?
I mean, just for years and years and years, people have pushed fescues because I think they're lower maintenance. They're considered a lower maintenance turf. You don't have to fertilize. The new varieties like H2O, Finlon H2O, mm-hmm. and remember the old Finlon 5GL, which is
H2O. You're going way back. I have
am.
A story to tell you about
but
that,
those,
too.
Those required less maintenance.
The tall fescues do better in our area because we have cool season grasses. Mm-hmm. It's a cool season grass, and that's what does best here. But I was just kind of curious, you know, sometimes why do you throw a rye in there? What's the difference between a perennial rye and an annual rye?
And well, the annual rye is the 1 year.
Right. I got it.
I mean, you're going to throw it. An annual rye is great for if you have major erosion issues and it's summertime and you need something in 2 to 3 days to start growing because it does grow fast.
Yeah, the rye typically, they'll germinate earlier than your fescue.
It's usually even in normal time a week faster, at least mm-hmm. my opinion.
Oh, big time. Yeah.
It's a whole week faster.
It's noticeably different. Yeah.
But, you know, a perennial rye, it's been said around here you can't grow perennial ryes. I've heard people say that in different areas, and I disagree with that. Because even ExecuTurf has a fairway four blend, I think they call it. And it's a four-way perennial rye blend. And it is a good seed.
Now, there's one I'd like to really look into that I do sell. It's called Double Time.
Yep.
That's from Central Farm and Garden.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that's a top-notch rye, and if we could ever get Ed from Ed's Feed and Seed to call in and talk about it. I understand that he planted some of that and really raves about it.
Well,
if you're up in the Montgomery area, Kenwood area, I should say, and you're at Ed's Feed and Seed, stop in and just ask Ed, what do you think of double time rye?
There you go.
I still think he's a little shy.
I'd love to kind of have a little trial somewhere. We need to find some bare ground, you know, if any, you know, and throw like a square of perennial rye, a square of fescue, and then a couple of the blends and just see what they look like.
Do you know where I think we could pull that off? If we get a hold of our good friend Turpin from Turpin's Sod Farm, Turpin Farms,
you know,
we might be able to do that.
He likes, there's a blue way.
He likes bluegrass.
He really likes that, you know. I haven't had as much success, but as he's explained, some of the new bluegrasses that they're pretty decent. So.
Supposed to be a lot more heat tolerant.
That's what they're supposed to.
It's funny, interesting.
Kentucky's the bluegrass state, but yet generally,
how did that come about? Because really, our bluegrasses would rather it be a little bit cooler. Once it gets hot, usually they
burn out. That's why I don't.
Usually
use
it will burn out. It goes dormant quicker than most other turfs.
But you know, back to the perennial rye. You know, I just think for so many years, fescue has been. And it is a great seed for this area, point blank.
Hold on to that thought. Let's take a quick break, because when we come back out of the break, let's kind of get more in depth into it. And if you're a homeowner and you're wanting to sow grass seed right now, let's talk more about it. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony Works. If you want to chime in and participate with this conversation, or if you have anything going on in the lawn that you want to know or share with us, certainly do so. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works, and we have a great show lined up for you. Always, we're going to talk about what plant am I, and that's later here in this morning's program. And if you get an opportunity, check that out on our Facebook page. That's a great way to stay in touch with us, as a matter of fact. And we always have the plant of the week, and if you want to stay in touch with us as well, you can certainly do that by emailing us in and around the house at b105.com. I don't know why I was thinking of HBI. I was thinking of Hubbard. No, I'll repeat that. I apologize. In and around the house at B105.com. And you want to catch a past show, Alex does a great job keeping up with that and keeping you up to date. And you can do that on our podcast. And also, we have a very, very special guest this morning. I'm not going to tell you who that is going to be around
the
8 o'clock
hour. No, but it is
worth
tuning in to at the 8 o'clock hour because it's... It's exciting.
Most definitely. And it's something that's kicking off in the Cincinnati area today, and it will go through up into June.
You know, there's so many cool things in our area. I know we were talking sports, but, you know, there's so many things in our area to see. And like I said, we're not going to give it away just yet. But this is exciting that Cincinnati has this show.
It's a jewel, and I've talked about this jewel that's in our own backyard here in the Cincinnati area. So you
Stick
definitely want to
hang
with it, hang in there with us around the 8 o'clock hour. And this is something that you can take the little ones to today or tomorrow or
take
next
your
week.
Camera if you're a photographer, either professional or if you are just an amateur. Doesn't matter. You're going to want to take your camera because it is really, really, really a cool show.
That it is. You know, before we went into the break, we were talking about sowing grass seed. And right now, Bob, I'm getting a lot of people coming in and are asking me, hey, is it too late? Is it too early to start thinking about spreading grass seed or sowing grass seed, I should say? And, you know, we were talking about how we can do that during the winter months. And really, this winter really was not optimal or an ideal time for us to do that because it was somewhat overly wet for the most part.
Right, and we talked about winter seeding, but there never was really a great time to do it. You had a little window at the end of February that I think you could have got away with it. But even then, we still had some heavy torrential rains that may have washed some of it away. So if you did grass seed early, it's not a bad idea to go get a little more and throw it down now.
We can certainly do that. Hang on there for a second, Bob. We have Kurt and Sue Leuenberger with us this morning on the radio. Good morning, guys. How are you?
Hi, Tony. How you doing?
Doing well. You're up early. You sound like you've been up for
a
while.
I've been listening to you since 6 o'clock.
Yeah, for 17, 18 minutes.
Yeah.
Good for you. How's the new home going, by the way?
Oh, it's great,
good.
Tony. It's great. But we need some help. We need, it might need an overhaul.
Well, we can take care of the overhaul. You know, we can tackle that one bite at a time, one area at a time. And if you need some help with that, Bob's certainly willing to step in and help with that. So we can bring plenty to the table for you, Sue.
All right. Sounds great.
Hey, Kurt, how are you?
Good.
Good.
You wanted to ask him about how to, what should we, that big rhododendron we have, the fellow that we bought the house from said he's never done anything to it since 1989.
Okay.
Never fertilized it, never done anything. What should I put down on it?
I would use Holytone, something that kind of has a little bit of sulfur with it to feed the rhododendron, which is an acid-loving plant when we say that. What we're trying to do is kind of keep that soil pH on the lower side under 7, you know, quite a bit under 7, actually. So I would just go ahead and use the Holytone.
Okay, sounds good.
That would be a good one. All right, we'll see when you stop by the store.
Okay, yeah. Or you can come over and see us, too.
We'll do that. I'll have a beer with you. How's that?
Yeah.
Okay.
You got it.
All right.
Thanks
you have a great
lot,
weekend.
Tony.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You can hand deliver that Espoma. Just take it to them.
I can certainly do that.
Delivery might be expensive for one bag of
Susan
Espoma.
Leuenberger. They're great customers and wonderful people. And they love gardening, and Kurt loves specialty kind of trees. And they just moved over into the Campbell County area. And they're really excited. They moved into a ranch.
Oh.
I think about that often sometimes, too, as I get older, instead of the two-story house.
Yeah, but you're in good shape, so you're all right.
Well, right now at the moment, but, you know, it all comes
and
in
Tina's
due time.
Fits. She doesn't have any trouble, so. You know, but the other thing that you had mentioned, the Holytone. Holytone's great, and I would recommend it as well. Fertilome's got that Azalea Evergreen food, which is actually a pretty good fertilizer as well. I like that one. You know, so that would be another option if you're a Fertilome person and you love it. That would be another option for you.
Those are all good products. They definitely are.
Yeah, but we were talking grass seed though. We were talking perennial rye before the call.
Well, we were talking about where I wanted to head is take me into the process of if you're wanting to sow grass seed, you have some bare spots, and say perhaps you kind of do the Fertilome three-step program, or you're putting down that pre-emergent, what would your approach be?
Well, I would not put down the Fertilome three-step pre-emergent if I'm going to throw grass seed, because it's just not going to work. So if your lawn is thick, then just go pre-emergent. You can go straight dimension, weed and grass stopper with no fertilizer, and then fertilize later. You can go three-step, but if I'm throwing grass seed down, I'm going to do a starter fertilizer with my grass seed. But the first step is you got to remove the dead grass, because most of the spots that I'm seeing, I don't know what pictures or people are coming in, but people are bringing on their phone pictures of their lawn, and there's dead grass. They're not bare spots as much as they're dead grass. And you have to remove that, because if you just throw the seed on top of the dead grass, it's not going to grow.
No, you don't make that. You don't get that good soil to seed contact.
So you got to prepare the lawn. And I love just rake it out. Garden weasel. Remember that one? Garden weasel?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite tools.
Those things are great. So,
you know, do you remember you could buy that on WXIX TV with three easy installments, easy payments?
Of $19.99.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shipping and handling.
Yeah.
But hey, you call now, we'll throw in the hand garden weasel. Yeah.
That's right. Call Tony. He'll throw that in.
Yeah, call now.
That's right. But anyways, you could rough up the ground. You just got to do something to loosen up the soil so you can get good surface contact. I had a lady in the other day. She's in Fort Thomas, and she has dogs, and they're kind of running through those areas. I told her those are going to be the challenging spots, because you really, in order to get grass to grow, you got to keep the dogs from matting it down.
You know what works really well with that? And I don't know if you remember this or not. When I was younger, it seemed like the old timers, when they would sow grass seed, they would sow their grass seed, they would put down a little bit of straw, and then it would always take like long fallen limb branches and put on top to keep the kids out and the dogs out.
Oh, keep them from running on it?
Yeah. Do you ever remember seeing anything of the sort?
Never saw anything like that.
You know,
that must have been before my time.
My next door neighbor, when I was a kid, Clarence Hilgeman, would always do that.
Okay.
Kept me out of it. So, you know, and
it
also
worked.
The dogs, it worked. And then all of a sudden, I'll just remove everything and there you have it.
Well, it was interesting. This lady that I was talking about,
right,
in her backyard, the dogs had made it pretty much mud. It was almost all mud. So we were going to work on that with the new lawn starter with a fescue grass seed. and some straw for the backside. Now, her front side, her lawn was pretty good. So we actually were doing the Fertilome three-step in the front. So we were actually using two different products, and she just had to make sure she got the right amount. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to do two different products if you have two different scenarios.
I'm experiencing that more often now than I used to, because a lot of times there are homeowners who have no issues at all in the front or the side of the house. Usually it's the back if they're near a wooded area of some sort. Then usually there's more of an issue back there, mm-hmm. you know, because sometimes you have shade. You just don't have a thick, healthy lawn. You know, it's a little bit thin. So a lot of times, you know, there's two different applications, two different approaches to various situations. And I'm seeing that more and more often.
Yeah. And I think with the fertilizer kind of coming, the new lawn starter comes in 1,000, 2,500, 5,000 square feet and 10,000 square feet from Fertilome. It has all different sizes. But the Prodiamine, the first step of the three-step, only comes in 5,000 and 10,000. So for her, we know we're going to put the pre-emergent down in the front, and she's only going to use half of it. So I told her she has two options. She can come back and actually put the second half down about 42 days from now, which would be a double application. I know that, that could be a four-step. But it's okay as long as she irrigates. And then in the back, the Fertilome 3 with the new lawn starter, I told her, okay, do the starter. Use half of it because it was 2,500 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
And 30 days from the day she puts her grass seed down, I want her to go back and do another application of fertilizer. So she's going to use her whole product. It just had to make sure the timing was right.
Oh, it's all about timing. I say it all the time. Timing and temperature.
Because you even put your fertilizer down a little bit late in your yard because of how busy you are and working at the store 7 days a week.
Totally different. And I just caught the rain the other night. And what I did, I put down the turf and ornamental weed and grass stopper from High Yield, which mm-hmm. is part of the Fertilome family. And that has the product in it, Dimension. So what I did, I spread that all throughout my landscape beds. Mm-hmm. It's just like Preen, and it works better than Preen. And it will keep you from pulling weeds, believe me. And I put that in my lawn. So that is my kind of a little extra first, somewhat of a step for
it's
my lawn.
It's the Tony three-step plus.
I don't know what you want to call it.
I don't know. I'm just making that up.
I will use the orange bag sometime in mid-May.
Right.
So I use the orange bag three times throughout the course of the year.
And everybody is different when it comes to lawn fertilization. Everybody is different. And
we'll talk more about that. We got to take another quick break. And if you want to talk about your lawn, anything with fertilization and so forth, the landscape beds, certainly chime in with us. Give us a shout, 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony Works. We'll be right back. Do that. We have a Facebook question from Karen Schultz, and she wants to know, Bob, how to get rid of the grass that is brown in the winter. Don't know the name of it. Now, that kind of sounds like to me it's one of the warm season types of grasses, and more than likely, maybe perhaps zoysia.
That's what it sounds like.
And zoysia grass is a very thick type of grass. It's a summer grass.
Deep rooted.
Yes.
Brown as can be right
brown
now.
Brown as can be. And because of it still being brown, it's not actively growing yet. So, Karen, when it starts to actively, you know, green up and get growing, that's when you want to spray it with something that has glyphosate in it, perhaps Kills All or Roundup. And you might have to take and do that a couple of times before you get rid of all of it.
I agree. And you can't do it right now. You have to let it get green. And once it starts to actively grow, that's the time to start spraying. Because right now it's dormant. You'd spray it. It wouldn't do anything.
Right. It won't do anything. And then the real the key after you spray and kill it is that you need to get it all out of there because it's so dense and thick. And part of its, you know, its dead root system now and everything that's on top needs to be removed. You need to take care of the soil surface, get it all graded back out to where you can sow grass seed, and you should be good from that point on.
And it is very easy. It's not easy. It takes work,
no.
But you can do it. My brother, he bought my grandma's old house, and I used to even mow the yard as a kid, and about 90% of the front was zoysia. So, I mean, you really didn't mow because it didn't grow fast, but I would actually mow it because there was some other fescues and other stuff on the perimeter, so it would get real tall, and the other stuff would stay real low. So I would mow every week for her. We actually ended up with my brother kind of tearing it all up, and we put a fescue over top all of it real heavy, and it came in really nice for him. And it's pretty much gone. But you can do it. You can get rid of it.
It takes a little while because you still have those rhizomes that are underground. And what we mean when we say rhizomes, that's how these types of grasses spread. The rhizomes spread underground, and they'll come up in various areas. And that's why that turf gets so thick when we talk about zoysia. And Robin Tidwell, she's called in the program before in the past.
Mm-hmm.
She had zoysia grass, and she obviously had access to like a bobcat.
Right.
So what she did, she just scraped off the whole top layer of the soil surface and got rid of everything and started over. But she had purchased she had purchased a product just in case if any of the zoysia was trying to make its way back to the surface from some of the rhizomes that were still in play.
Yeah.
And I forgot what the product was, but it won't kill the grass, but it will kill the zoysia.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so...
interesting to find out what that is.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was. Now, I wasn't familiar with it, and I've never used it, but I'll see if I can dig up that information.
You know, it's funny. We talk about zoysia, and most people want to get rid of it. One of my good friends out in Piner, he's trying to get it to grow. And so what he did is he bought some plugs
mm-hmm.
5 years ago, and he plugged his grass. I think he bought 500 or 1,000 plugs, and he plugged his yard. And then every year now, because it's grown so much, he takes a bulb planter and he'll get 500 new ones and he'll dig up 500 and then go replace some of the fescues. Because he's like, I'm out in the country. I've got 20 acres of fields around me. He goes, I can't control weeds. I constantly get weeds in my yard because they're blowing and they're everywhere around the farm. You know, he's gone a lot, so he can't mow as regularly as he's like. So he's actually trying to put zoysia everywhere. Now, it's brown as can be right now, most of his front yard.
Right.
And it's not pretty.
You know, up at the DeVue Park Golf Course, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, they have all zoysia fairways now.
They're brown as can be.
It took some time to get that all to come in, but, you know, that's one of those grasses. I'll tell you something. It's beautiful in the summer months, and it doesn't go bad, and those fairways stay nice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just one of those grasses that can take a beating and give you everything that you need to have when you're playing golf out there in the fairway.
I warned my buddy. I said, look, you've got a blacktop driveway. And if the zoysia gets close to some of the cracks, it's going to push its way through. You're going to have to make sure you keep it maintained. So he's got gravel on each side of his blacktop about a foot all the way around on both sides, and he keeps that maintained with some glyphosate, and that way it doesn't grow up.
You know, there's a lot of people that don't like zoysia. Boy, you know, once it starts working its way into your lawn, it's in there, especially if your neighbors have it too. I mean, it can be a little tough, and that can create some friction amongst neighbors.
Well, it can come in that way. It can come in from the wind. It can come in from birds. It can also come in and I'm not making a bad comment here, but it's a fact. If somebody goes and you're paying a professional mower and somebody's lawn is not taken care of and it's a little bit damp and they mow, sometimes those weed seeds and different things can transfer through the mower when they come and mow your yard next. So if you ever wonder, sometimes it happens that way.
And you know what?
I'm not being mean. It's just a fact.
You're absolutely right. You just brought something up. And when we talk about the Fertilume three-step program and we're using the first application, which is what you need to put down now at this point in time where we are at this point in the season, is the all seasons. And that is the red bag, and it has a product in it called prodiamine. Prodiamine is the pre-emergent product that keeps crabgrass and other unwanted weed seed from germinating and making its way into your lawn throughout the growing season. Now, when you put that down at this point in time, it is at its most effective, point at that time.
Right.
And as we progress throughout the summer months, depending upon how much rain we get or how much you water or how often, that barrier starts to wear thinner and thinner and thinner and thinner. And going back to what you just said, if you have a service that comes in and mows your lawn and they're mowing lawns that really aren't well taken care of or manicured and have a lot of weeds and it's damp early in the morning, sometimes there's that potential of that weed seed getting caught stuck up underneath the deck of the mower. And when they get to your yard and we're later in the season and that barrier starts to work thin and that seed drops, sometimes that's how it makes its way into your lawn.
It can. There's so many ways it can spread. There's so many ways. Wind is probably the number one way weed seeds spread. But, you know, there's just these options out there. So if you've ever wondered why sometimes your lawn, you're fighting weeds, you know, the barrier's breaking down. That's why we always talk about weed free zone. And we talk about weed out with crabgrass killer, which is the old weed out with Q, you know. And then also we talk about nudge sedge killers and all this other stuff that you spray in the summertime, because that's usually when that barrier is broken down and those weed seeds have a much easier time growing.
Yeah, as we start getting towards the tail end of summer, and depending upon how much you water or irrigate, you know, and the lawn and so forth, that barrier just gets thinner and thinner and thinner. And if you have a really nice thick lawn, it's not a bad idea to get the turf and ornamental weed and grass stopper with Dimension. Put that down in your lawn late in the season. And there's no fertilizer in it, so you're going to pick up where the prodiamine, the first step of the Fertilume three-step program for the lawn, leaves off.
And that's what I love about that product. And you and I were talking the other day about, you know, the probably the most notable herbicide out there pre-emergent is Preen. Wouldn't you think most people, when you think of something to prevent weeds,
they advertise.
It's because they're advertising and the marketing behind it. But if you look at what the coverage is on that product compared to the weed and grass stopper with dimensions from High Yield, it's night and day. I mean, you get twice the coverage for half the price. I mean, you don't get the fancy shaker bottle. I think that's the big thing. You're paying on that Preen, you're paying for that nice bottle. So if you have one of those, save it and then get to your independent garden centers who sell Fertilome and try that weed and grass stopper. It's just a great product.
What Bob's talking about is the turf and ornamental weed and grass stopper, and it contains the product in it called Dimension, and it goes under the High Yield name. And High Yield is a division of the Voluntary Purchasing Group, which is a part of Fertilume. They're all in the same family, and it's a great product. It's not a pretty bag. You're not paying for all that pretty packaging, and you're not paying for all the advertising, and it lasts a month longer. That's a huge benefit.
And it can go in lawns. It can go in your beds. So if you're walking around, you got a spreader and you're spreading it in your mulch beds and you get a little bit in your lawn, it's not going to hurt anything.
No.
Or if you spread it on your lawn like you do and you get it in your beds, it's not going to hurt anything.
I couldn't tell you how many bags I went through. I just did a whole back all my landscape beds, my lawn the other day, and it rained, and I'm thinking, perfect timing.
Yeah, and you know, just one more thing about the weedgrass stopper with dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for gardens. So if you're going to put it in your edibles.
Yeah, no, don't do that.
Don't do that. There is another product.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. We'll keep that in mind. That's a great one, because we got some other timely tips that we want to bring to your attention. And we'll do that when we come out of the break. And give us a call, 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony Works. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works, and we got a call. We have a call here. Mike on the line with us while we're in the break. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
We're doing well. What's going on?
So, question. I did something last year, but may not have been the smartest, and I have a raised flower garden or a raised vegetable garden.
Mm-hmm.
I live in a neighborhood, you know, small yard, so it's kind of close to the house. It was messing around with it one day and noticed ants. I dug down a little bit and there was a whole colony, eggs, ants, everything. This was maybe back in September.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point I was just kind of tired of ants, so I sprayed it all with ant killer.
Uh-huh.
Not the smartest idea for your vegetable garden.
Mm-hmm.
The vegetables were all pretty much gone at that point anyway. My question is that vegetable garden safe now to eat anything out of, or did I kind of kill the whole thing?
Well, you know, I would have to say for the most part, I really wouldn't dwell on it. Do you remember the product that you used or what was actually in it? Because I would have to say, especially as wet as it's been, a lot of it has broken down, which is a good thing. I don't know what the residual value would be.
Black, like an aerosol can.
Uh-huh. Like a Raid or something, or
something like that. Right?
Yeah, you know, I would seem to think what's come into your favor for the most part is the amount of rain that we've had within the past 6 months, and since you did that when you last applied that product, I can't tell you what the residual value is. To be honest with you, you might have to really do some deep digging, and if you still have that can. If you look at the active ingredient and Google that and go online, a lot of times there's some interesting safety data on it that will give you some of those residual values.
Okay, great. No, that's a good tip. That's something I haven't done.
Yeah, you'll be surprised. Sometimes when you start reading that stuff, don't be alarmed. It's like, wow, I didn't know that. Wow, I wish I wouldn't have, you know. But I think for the most part, I think the wet weather's come into play in your favor. Here's something you might try. And, you know, I understand that cinnamon is a good way to deter ants. So that might be something you want to do around your raised bed there since you're growing edibles.
Okay. I'll definitely give it a shot.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think the herb pennyroyal is also a good ant deterrent.
And there's one from Natural Guard, which is a Fertilome high yield product,
mm-hmm.
Diatomaceous Earth.
Yeah, Diatomaceous Earth.
So that's an organic and part of their natural organic line. And it's supposed to help also work with ants and slugs and different things like that.
And, you know, that's why two heads in here are better than one. Sometimes you don't think of everything. And as a matter of fact, my wife has used Diatomaceous Earth inside for ant issues because it's food grade and it's safe. So, Mike, any of those approaches there, I think, would be a good alternative to using chemicals for you.
All right.
That was a great question, too. And if you find anything out, if you're able to find that information, please share it with us.
Okay, will do.
All right, have a good weekend. Thank you.
You too. Bye.
I'm not 100% sure, but I think some of those products are pyrethrins.
Well, they're pretty safe too. Some of the
because a lot of those are going to be sprayed indoors where you're walking as a preventative. So if what did he say? Sprayed last year.
He wasn't really sure.
If he sprayed it a year ago and he kind of turned his garden a little bit, you know.
I wouldn't dwell on it too much.
Yeah.
I don't see anything there being harmful. But it's one of those things when you are growing edibles, and that's a great way to do it, by the way, when Mike was talking about the raised beds, one of my favorite approaches, and that gives you a great deal of control over how well your garden beds do because you can bring in that perfect soil mixture.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we were talking about weed control before we went into the break, now that we've talked a little bit about the raised beds and so forth, that Mike brought that up, a good way for weed control is Preen does have a good product for organic weed control, and that's with corn gluten.
Right.
And you can spread that, and you have to do that a little bit more often than you would the other products, but certainly safer, and you can sleep at night, not worrying about, hey, what am I consuming out of the garden that I've been treating with the corn gluten? You don't have to worry about it. It's a great weed suppressor. You just have to use it more often. And also, don't be afraid to use just plain old newspaper. I've done that with a great deal of success. And what I'll do, I'll lay out a sheet of newspaper, dampen it, put another layer on it. I'll do about three or four layers, you know, and dampen each layer. Then I'll put a little bit of straw over top of it. And it does a great job keeping weeds out of the garden, especially if you have raised beds. It works tremendously well. And it also, it does a couple things. It's keeping weeds at bay. It's also keeping the soil temperatures cooler. And it's also helping with moisture retention during the hot part of the summer.
Yeah.
So that's a good organic approach to keeping weeds out of your garden beds.
Yeah, absolutely. Treflon will work for raised beds too. But once again, when it comes to my food, I like to be as natural as I can. And the newspaper is the best way to do that. So,
or corn gluten. Or right, just, or gluten. You know, get out there and manually pull that stuff. So we got to take another quick break. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony Works. Give us a shout. Let us know what's on your mind or what you want to talk about in the landscape. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And we're talking everything gardening this morning, obviously. If you've you're getting up and you're joining us, welcome. And we were just talking a little bit about some organic approaches to taking care of your raised beds and so forth. And we're going to switch gears. We're going to talk about some timely tips, some things right now that we need to start considering that we need to most definitely take care of. And one of those, Bob, that comes to mind is trimming back, pruning back your ornamental grasses now.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of people who left them up all winter, and they're matting down already with the heavy rains and the snows, and they look messy.
I'm usually one of those, so I did mine last fall for the very first time in years.
Oh, you did? See, now, yeah. I wore off on you. I'm a fall grass planter.
I'm not going to give you any credit yet. But now I do feel kind of glad that I've already done that because it's one of those tasks when your ornamental grasses become of age and, you know, they get larger and larger and larger, it's like, oh, man, I got to cut that back. Now what am I going to do with all of that?
Well, I was out this week talking to one of the sales people who work for the sister station, Q102, and I was out looking at her electric box. And she had some huge gray owl juniper and enormous grasses. I mean, they were probably 2-3 feet wide, maybe mm-hmm. three to four feet wide.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, all you can do, we got to dig them up and split them and put small pieces back in because they just are enormous. And when grasses get big and get intertangled with other plants, they kind of look messy. So it's time to get them cut, get them out.
Time to do it.
And if you don't, if you're not going to cut them, your new foliage is going to try to fight through the old stuff, and then you're going to wonder why your plant looks bad.
Yeah, it just doesn't look as attractive. But, you know, something else, too, when we're talking about the ornamental grasses, the Miscanthus varieties in particular, they have a tendency, for those of you who know what I'm talking about, after you've had those for a couple of years, they start to open up in the center and start spreading outward.
And get some dead.
What I like to do is take a piece of the outer part and put it right back into the center sometimes.
So you would dig where the dead part is, and it's usually about anywhere between 6 inches to a foot of just dead.
In the center.
In the center.
It could be a little larger, too, in some cases.
So you'll take a spade and dig that out. So is that what you do? Take a spade, dig it out, put some soil in there, and then take a piece from the outer that's alive and put it back in?
That's what I do.
And you have to do that. I think it's great advice. But I really think people don't thin their grasses out soon enough. A lot of people leave them too long, and then all of a sudden they get where this plant, it keeps multiplying and multiplying and multiplying.
It just keeps moving outward and outward.
It keeps getting bigger and bigger and wider and wider. Get in there with a good spade and shape it.
It's not easy to cut. It's pretty thick stuff.
It is a pain.
Yeah, and that's why you need a good, sharp spade.
Yes.
When we talk about tools, good, sharp tools. Yes. And that makes that job a lot easier.
And I will argue about tools to anybody. If you're going to buy tools, you can get away with some cheap stuff with maybe a broom or a rake. But when it comes to your spade and your shovel, spend money and get a good one, especially if you got a lot of grasses and you need to split them.
Get a good one.
It makes a difference.
So that's one of the things you can do right now, or, you know, is to cut back your ornamental grasses.
Yep.
And rose bushes right now, if you've yet to do that, except for climbers.
Have you seen that the knockouts are just starting to bud a little bit? Or other roses?
Yours are
in the greenhouse a little bit.
I'm hearing that. Somebody had called yesterday about that. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about our rose bushes, cut those back to about 12 inches, 15 inches in height. And do that on an annual basis. And I say that because I think they're a lot more manageable, easier to work with, better behaved throughout the growing season. And you'll be thankful that you did that. It just makes those kind of chores and working with your rose bushes a lot easier. And when you do that, Bob, what else do you like to do?
With the roses?
Yeah, am I putting you on? Did I catch you off?
No, you didn't. Once I trim them and they start actively growing, I like to put a good bug control on them. So I'll do the
systemic
drench.
Right?
And I will do that. But I usually wait till I get a few leaves on them. You know, I want them to be actively growing before I treat that. I know a lot of people like to get it early, and I don't know how you feel. But I might wait a couple of weeks, let the leaves get going, because then it'll really absorb the chemical well.
I'm right with you. So, and that will protect your rose bushes for 1 year, up to a year, I should say, from the pesky rose slug. And if you ever get those, you know, where your roses look really, really tattered and beat up, the foliage is unidentifiable, kind of all those holes in the leaves, that's the rose slug. And the rose slug will have several generations throughout the course of the year. And using the Fertilume Systemic Drench for trees and shrubs will help you take care of that. Tell us the mixture ratio.
It is 3 ounces per foot of height. Now, on the roses, that's interesting. You just cut them to a foot.
Right.
So technically, they're only a foot tall. Now, I'm going to ask you, how would you treat a rose you just cut? What would you treat it?
I would at least factor on it growing to 3 feet in size and height. So I would use a minimum of 9 ounces of the systemic drench.
So usually what you do is if you have a plant that's 1 foot high, you're going to put 3 ounces of chemical per foot of height per gallon of water. So
and you
on
know,
the roses,
yeah.
You're technically planting on a 3 foot, so you're going to put 9 ounces of chemical with 1 gallon of water and then pour it on the root.
Maybe a gallon and a half, mix it up thoroughly, and just pour it slowly around the base.
Now, do you like to pull the mulch away and make like a little moat almost so when you pour it, it kind of stays in there?
I do, because it's right there at the base.
Yeah, your roses really have a main root and then a feeder route.
A lot
here
of feeder
there.
Routes, yes.
Yeah, but they're not a lot, especially. There's a main route.
Oh, there's a main route, but
so though, it's close.
You would be surprised how much a rose bush will root in. It's incredible.
Once it's established.
Once it's established.
But if you've got a newer rose, you know, there's not much to it. So not much to it.
We'll talk more about roses and some timely tips when we come back out of this break. These breaks come up awfully fast, it seems like. And if you want to share some tips with us about anything that's in your landscape or garden, certainly feel free to do that. 513-749-B105. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And we're talking about timely tips, things that you need to be thinking about doing and kind of getting started, at least this weekend. It's going to be fairly decent today, a lot of sunshine. So if that doesn't get you itching and wanting to get out into the landscape, I don't know what will. But also, we got a lot of basketball on today. So maybe you can do some of these chores early and get out to the garden center and pick up your three-step fertilizer program from Fertiloom and get all that stuff done early so you can watch basketball later.
Well,
right,
not
Bob?
To mention, just get into the greenhouse because I know yours will be the same way as
mine.
Oh,
it'll be nice and comfortable.
Today with the sun, it's supposed to be, according to the Weather Channel, 55 degrees and full sun. That's what they're saying right now. It's dark outside, so obviously we can't tell. But that's what they're saying today, 55 and really sunny. So the greenhouses ought to be about 85 to 90.
That's when they're at their best.
So if you like it hot and you want to kind of get a taste of summer, get to one of your greenhouses and walk in it, and you will be amazed. The humidity will be in there. At least it is in ours. The humidity is off the charts right now with all the rain because you've got concrete floors. We've got gravel, so that gravel gets some moisture underneath it. And I'll tell you what, it gets humid.
Oh, it feels good. And you can smell the soil. You know, and what I do, I'll water down the walkways and so forth to get that humidity built up.
Yep.
Just that feeling. And that's T-shirt weather inside.
Oh, you walk in and like Teresa and Elizabeth, they're plotting all the annuals right now. And they're really looking amazing. But it's funny, I walk in, you know, and I'm still cold because I've been in and out meeting clients and getting out of the truck and being outside. And then I'll come back in and I'll see them and they're sweating and they got their shirts rolled up, you know, and they're just dripping with sweat because it's 85, 90 degrees in the greenhouse, you know, and they're like, it's so hot, but it's just, you know, the
quit
time of year.
Complaining. This is when it feels great in the greenhouse.
Well, the plants
now,
love it.
Let's talk about it in June and July and August, and that'd be another feeling inside the greenhouse.
We'll see how I am. I like it hot, so I'm not going to be complaining. I don't like the cold. I complain about the cold all the time. I don't mind being hot. And I know everybody's different. Everybody
that
has their
are.
Thing. You like being cooler.
I do. I like it when it's a little bit cooler.
I'm surprised you haven't broke out the shorts yet. You're always in shorts.
I usually am. It's a little too early. I'm not that anxious to get into shorts yet because I don't want to be cold either. But as long as, you know, shorts, long sleeve shirt, sweatshirt, something like that, I'm in.
It won't be long.
And we have Mike with us on the line this morning. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. How are you?
Doing well. What can we help you with? What's going on?
Well, I put some grass seed down the last snow we had in February. February.
Yeah.
And I was wanting to know when I could put the crabgrass preventer down.
Okay, that's a great question. And what you're going to have to do is wait till you notice and see that grass seed where it has started to germinate. And you need to get at least 2 to 3 mowings in on that new grass, get it established and hardened off before you can put down that first application.
All righty.
And, you know, and don't fret it because you may not get 100% of everything with the first application from Fertiloom with the prodiamine in it. But rest assured, you're at least going to get up to 90-95% of everything else that tries to get in.
Oh, good.
So don't worry about that. And this is something that's very interesting. You sowed your grass seed back in February.
Yes.
And I tell homeowners to do this all the time. Sow a little grass seed in your landscape bed on the shady side of your house and the sunny side of your house. And you can always get rid of that once it comes up. But those are really good indicators when you should see your grass seed germinating in the lawn.
That's a good idea.
You know, especially on the shady side of the house, once that grass seed germinates on the shady side of the house in the landscape bed, it better be up everywhere else.
Okay, great. Thanks.
So keep us in the loop, and you can certainly put down that crabgrass preventer after you mow that lawn once that new seed gets up a couple of times.
All righty, I appreciate it.
And, Mike, one last thing. If you want your cake and eat it too, We've talked about this before in the past. There is a product out there that you can put down with that grass seed that can identify between grass seed and crabgrass seed. And that is a product that goes under the trade name of either Siguron or Tupersan. And you get just a little bit of element of fertilizer with it, but it's a little on the pricey side, but it will allow you to protect yourself early in the game if you want to do that.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Mike, have a good weekend. Thanks.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah, I think the ground's too cold, even though he sowed it on that last snow.
It's still
the ground is still cool because we've had these cool mornings, and we've had a lot of rain. We've had some sunny days, but I think we've only really had one or two in the 70s. So wouldn't be shocked if he hasn't had even a speck of anything showing.
Yeah, most people at this point in time, no. I would seriously doubt it. I've not really seen anything germinating as of yet, but that's a great question, and you certainly... The thing you need to keep into consideration here and in mind, those of you who have sown grass seed, you have to allow it to get up and get established and mow it a couple of times before you put down that first application with the pre-emergent. And those of you who have lawn care services, make sure that they know that you have sown grass seed, if in fact you have, just so you guys don't get your signals mixed up. And you might wonder why your grass seed didn't germinate. So that could come into play as well. Those are things you need to kind of be aware of and coordinate with your mowing company or whoever's taking care of your lawn with you.
You know, I know we were talking about maintenance, but and I've told the story before, but I want to tell it again. I know you've heard the story. It was probably about 15 years ago. We redid somebody's lawn about this time. Redid the whole lawn, tore it all up. We reseeded, fertilized, and strawed the whole yard.
Mm-hmm.
And a company that people would know, and I'm not going to name their name, came in and put a pre-emergent fertilizer right over the straw, put their sign in there, and the homeowner called me, and he's like, Bob, I fired them last year because they were terrible, is what his quote was. And he said, they came and they put a pre-emergent down on my lawn, and I didn't want it.
While the straw was on the top?
The whole yard was strawed. Not like a couple pieces.
No, wait a minute.
The whole yard.
Time out. What does that tell you?
That they don't know what they're doing.
Are they training their staff? I think what I think that a lot of those companies should do, instead of just pulling up in the front, going at it at their leisure and their will, they should knock on the door or at least make a phone call to the customer the day before. We're going to be at your home the next day. We're going to put the pre-emergent down. We want to make sure that you didn't sow any grass seed. I think that's a common courtesy call.
Yep.
So but you don't get that, do you?
You don't. No. And I'll have another story.
And I didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's all right. You can steal my thunder. It's all right. Anyways.
You better take that back.
All right. I'll take it back. There, I just grabbed it. So they put it down. So he's all in a panic. And I said, okay. And I didn't know what they used. So I wasn't panicked, but I also was like, okay, we're in trouble. So I want you to call the company. I want you to find out exactly what they put down. I need to know the chemical. I need to know the rate, and I need to know the brand,
mm-hmm.
and I want to know it all. And I said, and I'll get you the information. So he gets me all the information. He comes up. I mean, he's not hysterical, but he is upset. He goes, because he just paid me to redo his whole lawn. It wasn't cheap. And he's like, what are we going to do? I'm going to have to go after him. I'm like, hang on, sit tight. Turns out they used one-third of the amount of product that Prodiamine uses. So two-thirds less product.
So their application was a lot less. They had a lot less active ingredient in it.
66% less.
Than what Fertilume has.
Right.
Is your point. Got it.
The grass seed grew anyways. His lawn grew just fine because they were not putting enough product on to prevent any seed from germinating. And people may wonder, well, I'm getting it for cheap. Well, how do you drive a $100,000 truck, pay a guy an hourly rate, pay his insurance, and put a product down, and you charge a cheap amount? There's only one way to get around it, and that's put a cheap product down.
Yeah, it's like the potato chip bag. You just, you know, you put less in the bag. The right. bags are still big. You just put less in the bag.
Fill it full of air. But that's what happens. So,
air chips.
And, you know, going back to the other thing where you said, why don't they call? I had another homeowner call me this year. 2 years in a row, he's fired a company, and they show up in February and treated his lawn with a pre-emergent. First of all, it was late February, which was way too early. And they're like, well, we have to get the product down. So he calls the company and says, I didn't want you. I use Fertilome. I love it. I use the three-step. I do my own. Why did you do that? He goes, don't worry about it. In about 2 weeks, it'll be all used up and you can put your Fertilome down. So they're putting a pre-emergent down that's going to last 2 weeks.
Yeah. And I also
want to,
and I also, you know, there is a lot of that, Bob, and it's really upsetting, but I also want to point out not every lawn service company operates that way. I just want to say that.
I agree.
Because I don't want to beat them up, but do your due diligence as a homeowner, get references, and just make sure you're in touch and in contact with your lawn service company.
And they, a good reputable company, will talk to you about all that stuff.
Right.
They
will. Yeah, we got to take another quick break. And if you have anything you want to share with us or any funny stories or anything that really upsets you, just like what Bob had mentioned about the lawn company spraying over top of what was done, please feel free to share that with us. 513-749-B105 in and around the house with Tony Works. And we're going to continue our conversation in the garden when we come back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And we've been covering a lot of ground and we still have a couple of things yet in this 7 o'clock hour that we're going to touch base on. A few more tips and certainly what plant am I that you can still check out on our Facebook page. We do that every Friday and we discuss that on Saturday mornings here at In and Around the House. And also we will be talking about our plant of the week and it is just starting to crack color and the color is yellow if that kind of gives you a hint. So certainly you want to hang out with us. And also our special guest, I'm going to kind of let the cat out of the bag. Will be Andrea Shepman from the Krohn Conservatory. And guess what? Bob, the Butterfly Show. The Butterflies of Ecuador will be kicking off today at the Krohn Conservatory. And we're going to talk about that. And that's definitely a great place to take the kids and get them engaged and see all the butterflies and what a fun afternoon that would be. And while we were in the break, we got Bob, we received a Facebook question. And I'll throw this your way. It says, good morning, guys. Is it too late to sow grass seed? I've been using the three-step for a couple of years now, and my yard is looking pretty sparse. And that's from Kim Wilson. And there's a couple of things that might come into play here, and we're going to kind of dial in on it for you, Kim. And Bob, let's take it.
Let's just answer the question point blank. No, it's not too late to throw grass seed.
No, it's not.
It's actually a great time to throw grass seed. She's just going to have to switch around from the three-step and just kind of change things up a little bit and just get seed, new lawn starter, and let's get that lawn thicker. Because still, what is the best way to prevent weeds? It's not a pre-emergent. It's a thick lawn.
It's a thick lawn. Now, this is something that when we talk about dialing in and when we start asking questions, you know, we do that for a reason. And it's, you know, we're not putting you on the witness stand by any means, but these are the questions we want to ask you, Kim. You know, do you have a lot of large trees nearby that maybe shading the lawn a little too much?
Do you have animals? Do you have the one we had that we talked about earlier? She has three dogs. Well, that'll tear up a lawn when it's wet really, really, really quick.
So there are a number of variables that come into play when we talk about lawns. And I also want to point this out, too. Any fertilizer program that you get onto or become a part of really will not bring you the results that you're looking for if you do not have a lawn to start with. We need a lawn to start with, and that's why we need to sow the grass seed first, get the lawn up, then start using the products to keep everything into play. You know, I always tell people the three-step program or any other program is not a magic bullet. You know, you don't put that down, and I'm not saying, Kim, that you did this, but you just don't put it down, and then next week you got a beautiful lawn.
No, and especially with the first step, I always tell people, you're going to do this, and you're not going to come back to me and say, this is the greatest product I've ever used. Because to be honest with you, the fall steps do way more for color and growth and what you see than the spring step.
Absolutely.
So, yes, it's a great time to sow seed. I would absolutely do it. I wouldn't. If I need it, like my front yard, I've got some spots that have died off, and I'm going to grass seed and starter fertilizer. I'm not going to worry about the weed prevention in the lawn this year, early in the spring, because I need a thicker lawn. I need it better. I've had some damage from over the summers. I think I had a little bit of grub damage last year, so I just need to be patient and go with the thicker lawn, and then I'll put my pre-emergent down.
Got it. So, Kim, I hope that helps. And, you know, if you're able to give us a shout and kind of give us some idea, you know, what's going on, if you have trees and so forth, excuse me, we can certainly talk about it. But we need to get that lawn established. And to answer your question, like Bob said, yes, right now is the time to sow grass seed.
Yeah, do it.
So we always want to know kind of like what's going on behind the scenes or within the parameters of the area that we're working with. So
it's kind of like, and I know you're getting a lot of questions, and I know a lot of our guys that, you know, you hear advertising on the show, they're getting the same question. They'll come in and say, hey, I want the Fertiloam 3-step. And what's the first question you ask people? Because the first one I ask is, how many square feet you got? Because I think a lot of people put the wrong amount of fertilizer and weed prevention down.
My first question is, how does the lawn look? How healthy is it?
That's my second question usually.
You know, I want to know, you know, what percentage of the lawn is riddled with anything that you don't want in there?
Or if there's bare spots. I mean, if you got 70% grass, I would definitely recommend grass seed and a starter fertilizer. Because if you got that many bare spots, that's just open areas for weeds to grow. You know, if you look at your coverage on your lawn and it's 95, 100, or close to 100%, I wouldn't even worry about grass seed. You know, so there's a lot of variables. But I think a lot of people, even still, you know, they'll come in and they're like, well, my lawn is, you know, it's just an average lawn. Well, that could be a half acre. That could be a quarter acre. You know, if you're an average lawn in Newport, that could be like 1,000 square feet. You know, so you got to know what you're doing, because I think most people put the wrong amount down. I think that's if they ever have lack of success with a weed prevention program or spraying weeds, I think a lot of times it's human error more than it is the product, because the products are tested. They work.
Yeah, that they are. Sometimes it's all about timing. It's all about temperature. Also, it's about, you know, did you mix it correctly? Did you use it according to the label? And, you know, sometimes it takes a couple of applications.
Sure.
With various things. And, you know, just don't do it once and come back and say, ah, that stuff doesn't work. You know, it takes a little bit of, you need to be persistent with it.
Right.
You need to stay on top of it.
Well, like you were talking about in your commercial that just ran, that you'll loan a spreader out as long as people return it. But you'll loan a spreader out. Well, what if I walk, and you've been with me, I walk fast and I have a big stride. What if you're a slow walker? I mean, you're going to put that down at a different rate. So there's a lot of variables that come into play.
Slow walker, close talker, all these variables are killing me.
But the point being is, if you have 5,000 square feet and you walk slow or you walk fast, you have 5,000 square feet. But if you have 5,000 square feet and you put down 2,500 square feet of fertilizer on 5,000, and you're going to be mad, the product doesn't work. Well, no, the product works. You put it down wrong. So you really got to know. And the easy way to know is just walk off your lawn. It doesn't have to be perfect, but if you you walk across and measure across, and, you know, length and depth.
Length times width.
Right.
Equals square footage.
And there you go.
Kind of gives you a good idea so you don't put down too much or too little.
But right. And you can take that, point. You know, you can bring, you figure in the house, the driveway, and beds. At least you'll get a lot closer than, okay, I don't know. I just give me 5,000 square foot bag.
Great point. Great point there. What else can we do that's a timely kind of thing right now in the landscape?
You know, one I love to do right now is I love to turn the mulch.
I agree. And it's been really wet. Use that garden weasel, turn that over.
Hard rake. You know, even if you got a soft rake, something to loosen up the mulch, because it's kind of crusty right now. So as it is raining, it's washing off. You know, rain's going off. It's even if you're throwing your weed prevention down, it's not going to get in where it
as
needs
effectively,
to prevent
right.
the weeds. So you need to... you need to make sure you turn that mulch.
Yeah, I like to turn it over. And, you know, a lot of times, this is especially important for people who have a little bit, you know, a little too much mulch. You know, a lot of times it gets really crusty underneath. You get that white, moldy substance on it, and you can just tell where water wasn't permeating it that thoroughly during the summer months or when you're watering. That's so, so important in getting oxygen to the soil surface.
And what's the big benefits of weeds? Or of mulch. I'm sorry. What's the big benefit of mulch?
Weed suppression.
Weed suppression and adequate temperatures. So it regulates temperature, so it keeps it more consistent. And then also moisture retention. But also it wants to break down and add good compost nutrients to the soil. And if you turn your mulch, it'll break down more efficiently. And you won't have to rake it out completely and start over probably ever if you really turn your mulch. And not to mention, it just brings the color back for a short time.
Right. The aesthetic part of that really makes it look a lot better.
And then if you don't mulch till later summer, you're okay. So I like to turn my mulch this time of year. Other things I'm seeing out there, liriope, the monkey grass, has to be pruned and trimmed. A lot of perennials are still messy. Seeing a lot of daylilies with the old growth from last year, and the new growth is already pushing through. So get out there and remove that.
Clean all that stuff up, that debris.
Leaving a lot of hosta foliage still on the ground. You know, clean all that stuff up before the new stuff gets going. It'll be healthier.
And, you know, what happens ultimately when you leave all that debris lie around, that harbors insects, diseases, and all that other good stuff. It protects those insects, and they get to come out and kind of give you a fit.
They do.
This upcoming season. So we want to prevent all of that.
Right.
You know, something else I want to touch on really, really quick. When we're talking about rose bushes and cutting those back to about 12 to 15 inches, with the exception of climbers and using the systemic drench on those. Also, I like to get into the habit of fertilizing monthly.
Yes. Well, most of those fertilizers are, 8 weeks with the imidacloprid weed control in it. They have to be done every 8 weeks. But roses are pretty big feeders.
Oh, they're heavy feeders throughout the growing season. Mm-hmm. So keep that in mind because we want to also bring that up as well. So we got to take another quick break. And when we come out of the break, let's talk about what plant am I? 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony Works. Bob and I will be back in just a moment. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. And if you're just getting up and joining us, welcome. And if you look outside, you can see it's going to be a clear day. Sunshine, sunshine, sunshine. And who doesn't love sunshine after all those gray, dreary days that we had this winter? We're all ready to move forward. And if you get out to your local garden centers and nurseries, you're going to see a lot of really cool stuff coming in. And the pansies are in full color, Bob. They're just showing a lot of bud and bloom.
Beautiful.
It's just all starting to come together.
Yeah, you starting to see maple starting to bud up a little
maple
bit.
Maple trees are flowering. Yeah, some of them, yes.
Are popping. The bulbs are popping.
Daffodils are in full bloom.
I mean, it's Cincinnati in the springtime really is a great place to live. Just seeing everything just waking up.
Now, go back and say that again.
Cincinnati in the spring is a great place to live.
Sometimes if you get to see the spring, sometimes we go from winter to summer.
We're in Cincinnati. We know,
That's right.
5 minutes.
That's why I'm asking you that again.
Don't change the, don't worry about the weather because in 5 minutes it'll change.
It'll change.
But if you look out, it's not green yet, but it won't be long when those honeysuckles start popping a little bit, and you'll start to see some the red buds will start popping. Forsythia.
Which is already starting. Yeah. You'll see the red buds in particular.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fun time. We both love this.
It's an exciting time because this is what we do in our business, and this is what we're trying to just bring to the table and talk more about and get everybody on board. So a great way, again, to stay in touch with us is definitely on our Facebook page. When you go out there, you got to like us. Feel free to share some things with us, some photographs and so forth. And our What Am I plant of the week, Bob, is the shrimp plant.
It's the shrimp, and it's not a short plant.
Kind of neat. It's really interesting.
It's not short. And, that was a bad dad joke, wasn't it? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to kind of get you going there.
No, I got it. The shrimp. It's almost like a little horse.
There you go.
He's got a sore throat.
But the shrimp plant, get to our Facebook page and check out the pictures that Tony has posted because it is very unique.
It's a different kind of plant. It's a tropical plant. It's also the botanical name is Justicia.
Yep.
And there's also another one that looks just like it, a little bit different, but it actually has a different botanical name called Pachystachys lutea. That's the yellow one.
Spell that. No, I'm just kidding.
Pachystachys.
All right, we'll check that later.
Yeah. You want to know its origin? No, I'm just kidding you.
Yeah.
But
we just got in
some tropicals, and we can do that because we have a controlled environment. We have greenhouses. And I thought, this is kind of an interesting plant. Some people either really, really like it or they don't. It's easy to take care of. It doesn't require a lot of effort to take care of it. And if you like to do container gardening, you can get this in a tree form. You can see what we have here on our Facebook page. It has more of a braided trunk look to it. And they're great in containers for out on a deck, the patio.
They're fairly bug resistant compared to like the braided hibiscus, which the aphids tend to get to fairly easily. At least that's my opinion. They just don't seem to have as many bug issues, but not that the hibiscus really do, because that's treatable and easy to maintain.
You know,
I like this place.
Now that you say that, you're right on, because there's a customer that I will winter over two of those for them, and they'll kind of drop their leaves and so forth, but I've really never noticed any insect issues coming, you know, come springtime.
Not on the shrimp plant. Now, no, it is a zone 9, so it's tropical.
Now, that's interesting. So, yeah, it is a tropical plant, zone 9, and you can take care of these indoors throughout the winter months just like you would a tropical hibiscus, be it shrub form or tree form, or a mandevilla, or, you know, a diplodenia, anything like that that's tropical, you can certainly do that. But I want to ask you something. You know, if it's really, if you don't notice a lot of insect activity on it, I wonder if it has something built in that makes them resistant to insects.
Well, clearly there's something in there that the aphids don't like. Because with hibiscus, and I don't know if you have this in yours.
Oh, yeah, they love the new
you
growth.
You have to sometimes treat some of those, especially if they stick around for a little
while.
They
love the new growth.
But this is an acquired taste, kind of, so to speak, plant. You're going to walk in, and some people are going to go, that's weird.
See,
you need to get to Facebook and look at it, because it is very different.
Now, Tina thinks it's weird. She doesn't care
for
it.
Okay, there you go.
So yeah, you're absolutely right.
You know, I think they're really neat, but I don't ever use them myself. I have before. There's other things, like I still like the tropical or the hibiscus better, just because I like the big giant flower. And this one is very unique. It's very different. It is great in containers.
And it blooms all summer. You have to deadhead it. I mean, you have to take the old blooms off once they're spent.
Right.
But it is one that will create some buzz and some conversation if you have friends and family over. They'll ask you, what is that plant?
Exactly. And you know what? Going back to our Facebook page, and we really want to encourage the listeners to get to the Facebook page, like it, and participate in this, because we're going to do this every week. What plant is it? And it's going to vary from, we've already done some house plants. We've done some tropicals. We're now getting into where we're going to start doing some other plants as well. Some are really easy. There was a lot of people that really nailed this one. I think everybody pretty much did. So
yeah, they did. They were on it. They were Johnny on. And we had a great question, too, about the shrimp plant. And that was from Stephanie Lee. She says, definitely a shrimp plant. I will tune in as always, Tony. Curious to know if you can restart these with a sprout. Seems like it should have, you should be able to do it. So, yes, you can. And it's best done with cuttings, taking the tip cutting when you want to propagate the shrimp plant. And I always recommend people to take a lot of cuttings and also use the rooting hormone powders.
Yes.
Fertilume makes a great rooting hormone powder.
Mm-hmm.
Just dip your cutting in water, then into the powder, and then stick it into soil. Try and use a seedling kind of mix or something that's a nice, clean, sterile soil.
Yeah, it's probably going to be more peaty, too. Like, have a little more peat moss in it
than some
of the bark ones.
Because
the bark ones are not going to be good. They're more for once they're established.
Right, and then you'll kind of just keep it misted, you know, just keep an eye on it. But the more cuttings you take, the more successful that you'll be. So there you have it. What plant am I? The shrimp plant. Check it out on our Facebook page. And we got to take another quick break. And how about, Bob, when we come out of the break, let's talk about the plant of the week. What do you think?
Sounds great.
All right. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony Works. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. And before we went into the break, we kind of teased you with what our plan of the week is going to be, and we'll just talk about that in just a second. A great way to stay in touch with us is via our Facebook page. And if you want to catch a past show, you can do that on our podcast. And also, if you want to email us a question, you can do that as well. And that is in and around the house at b105.com. And if you're just joining us, welcome. And if you're just getting up, peer outside and just look at that clear sky.
It's going to be a beautiful day.
It is. And the sun is making its way up. And get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. This is going to be a great weekend to start stocking up on some of your seed starting supplies. Get out there and pick up your lawn supplies. If you still need to take your mower and power equipment in to have it taken, you know, somebody take a look at it, sharpen the blades and all that good stuff. certainly do that. Don't keep putting that off. We'll be cutting grass before long, before you know it, actually. And go down and see our good friends at Bud Herbert Motors right there near Spring Grove Cemetery. They do a great job. They always take care of my power equipment. Or the boys out there at Crescent Springs, they do a great job. And even Danny Schwab over there on the west side of town, he takes care of power equipment for people. So don't put that off. You need those tools and power equipment so you can have a nice lawn.
And you're late. Let's be honest. Well, haven't done it yet, you're late. You better get it in there, and you may even ask them.
Better
how
late,
long before I get it back?
Better they, late than never.
They're probably so busy right now. They may say, we'll get it back to you, but it might be 3 weeks. Well, in 3 weeks, guess what we're going to be doing?
Mowing.
We're already mowing. So,
you'll be mowing.
You know, you need
mowing,
to.
Mowing, mowing, mowing.
But before we went to the break, we were talking about our plant of the week.
And the reason being is because it's just now starting to crack color, probably for some a little more so than others, depending upon where it's located in the landscape. But that is the forsythia. We always know that spring has arrived when we see the forsythia in bloom.
Well, it is our indicator of when to put our pre-emergent fertilizer in our lawn. So that's why I wanted to talk about it, because I'm like, hey, let's talk about something that's really relevant.
Right.
To our time, as well as it is a beautiful plant when it's in bloom.
It is. And, you know, there are newer varieties now, Bob, that are readily available, and you're seeing at the nurseries and garden centers that aren't like the old varieties of forsythia.
Right. Some of those old ones used to get huge.
They would. They would. You would have to keep them in control. You would prune those back. And, you know, they are a spring bloomer, so therefore when you are pruning your forsythia, do it when they're finished blooming.
But you can butcher these.
Oh.
My grandma had some, and
buzzards.
Once again, I go back to grandma, because when I was a kid, I would always go to her house, and she had forsythia on the side of the house. And it was a ranch, just a standard ranch, and they'd be up to the peak of the roof summertime.
They could get quite large.
And I would cut them down to about 3 feet tall. They would look terrible. And I remember grandma always saying, don't worry about it, Bobby. And I'm like, okay. She's like, they'll be fine. And 3 years later, I'm doing the same thing.
So she would call you Bobby?
Oh, I was always Bobby to grandma.
With a Y or an IE?
With a Y.
Okay.
IE's for the females.
just
you
had
know,
to ask.
You know better.
I know better. When I see somebody correspond with me, I get something in the mail, and it's with an I. I just shake my head.
Yeah.
That's bad.
Yeah. You know, yeah. There's
Tony with a Y, not an I.
I've known Tonys with I. They're all girls.
Not me. Yeah, that's right. That's my point. Thank you.
But, you know, forsythia, some of the varieties that I really like and I've used, an older-fashioned one I think is Linwood Gold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it gets pretty large. Another one I really like is Meadowlark, you know, but you got to be prepared for some of these to get big.
They do. And that's why I kind of lean towards some of the newer varieties like the Show-Off series.
Yes, the dwarfs.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And actually, there's an array of various dwarf sizes.
It really is.
And the one that I think of a lot, and it really gives you a lot of pop, is just a standard show-off. But I like the show-off, the one called Sugar Baby.
Yeah.
Like 1 to 2 feet in height in the landscape, kind of something you don't have to worry about pruning back all the time.
Leaves are a little smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Foliage is a little smaller. Plant is much smaller. You know, what I like about some of the larger forsythias, I'll use those for people in like if they have hillsides where it's kind of eroding a little bit. Have you ever noticed some of the old, like forsythia, when it kind of falls down and it attaches to the ground, it starts another plant right there?
You
ever seen that?
No, I really haven't.
Really? Yeah,
no.
It happens all the time.
So it roots rather easily, obviously.
It does. So like the foliage on the bigger ones, they'll fall, sit right on the ground on both sides, and they'll actually root in off those stems. And then you got more plants. So they really hold hillsides down. They're the bigger ones. These aren't the new varieties.
So you're bringing an erosion element into play here.
That's what I've used these
for,
believe it or not. Besides, a lot of people use them for fencing and blockage and hedges. You know, I like it for that. But the dwarf variety are more interesting because they actually fit better in the landscape.
If we could just get the forsythia to bloom longer throughout the season.
Multiple blooms.
Yeah, multiple blooms. That would be awesome. So it's an old-time favorite, and again, that's our plant of the week. We won't dwell on it. It's just one of those, when we see the forsythia in bloom, we know that spring has arrived, which it did just the other day, right?
It did, officially.
It's officially here. So we got to take another quick break, And if you have anything you want to share with us that's going on in the landscape or in the lawn or in the garden, feel free to give us a shout, 513-749-B105. And when we come back, our friend Andrea Shetman from the Crone Conservatory is here to talk about the annual butterfly show. You definitely want to hang out here with us, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And our guest has arrived, and that is Andrea Shetman from the Crone Conservatory. And good morning, Andrea. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Happy to be here.
Well, thank you. It's been a couple of years, I think, since you were last in.
Yes.
And I think 1 year, is there a Ruth Ann?
Yes, Ruth Ann used to work with me. She has okay. since retired.
Okay.
And yes.
And Mark House, is he still there?
Mark House is still there working with me, yes.
And Bethany, I'm trying to remember Bethany. She moved, right?
She moved on and started some new initiatives on her own. She's doing great.
Good, good. Well, welcome. It's always a pleasure to have you in, and it's been a while. And this time of year is really one of your biggest events at this time, and that is the Butterfly Show. And these are the butterflies from Ecuador?
Yes, and this is our 24th year. So Butterflies of Ecuador, it's quite exciting. I can't believe it seems like yesterday we had the first one, and next year will be the 25th.
Awesome, awesome.
It's really exciting. I mean, if you haven't been to this show, you need to go, especially if you have little ones. It's just phenomenal. It's just so exciting
it's
to be
fascinating.
In
it. Fascinating.
It really is.
And to see all the various colors that some of the butterflies possess on the wings and so forth. Really, really interesting. There's so many species of butterflies. And I'm trying to remember, I shouldn't say this, but the last time I was there, it was the butterflies of Monarch Morocco.
Morocco,
thank you. That was the last time I was at the butterfly show.
That's been 5 years.
It's been five?
Oh, my gosh.
I'm in my ninth year here. Where has the time gone? I'm sorry to say that.
Well, that's all right, because you did forget how many years you've been. You're like, I've been here like 5 or 6 years. And then you look back and you're like, I've been here 9 years. And that goes fast.
Year, yeah, it does. It goes by so fast. Wow. It's been long?
You know, the pamphlet that they hand out, you know, you get this cool pamphlet and you know, all the butterflies, and you can search for the butterflies and kind of check them off your list, you know, and it gives the descriptions. It's just, to me, it's fascinating, but I just love it.
It is. You know, take us behind the scenes, Andrea, and tell us really, you know, when do you start planning for this show, and how do you coordinate getting all the butterflies in as you need them, because this show goes on for quite some time.
It's 13 weekends, 12 weeks, and the last day is on Father's Day. So we start at least a year out in planning this, sometimes more. And, you know, of course, because all of this is done under USDA permit, there's a lot of work and effort that goes into that to coordinate with the USDA and make sure that we have our permits in order for all the things that we want to bring in. But all of the team has to work very synergistically together between the design team as they design the show. You know, if we go to a certain country that we want to feature, there's not only the horticultural elements that we have to look at to put into it, but we also look at the cultural elements. And if there is a group of people in the Cincinnati region that we can network with to make sure that we're not maybe representing the country in a way that might be too commercialize. We want to make sure that we're creating an authentic experience. The butterflies themselves, we go to butterfly farmers around the world. It's, to me, quite one of the most fascinating industries, that there are people out there that are literally raising plants to be eaten by caterpillars to be growing butterflies. Mm-hmm. None of these butterflies are collected in the wild, so they're very sustainable that way. But bringing these in from Ecuador this year, we have a whole group of ones there. The heliconius, that there is a butterfly supplier in Ecuador, and Jacob only raises heliconius butterflies. And the diversity among that species is just incredible. So we'll have a whole bunch of these. To the common name for the grouping of them, they call them long-wing butterflies. And these long-wing butterflies, the great thing about them for exhibit is that they feed on pollen, and the pollen is a protein source that keeps them alive longer rather than just nectar. So some of the plants that are chosen for the room are chosen for nectar plants. Some of them are chosen for pollen plants. But we have to make sure that we're all working simultaneously to know that we're not putting the wrong plants in the exhibit.
Right, right. That's quite a task. So I'm under the impression when you're doing this, you're starting plants early so you can get them in bloom to provide the pollen and then get those others blooming to provide the nectar and make everything just kind of sync up like how
mm-hmm.
it should.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, so, it's
that's you, not easy. I mean, no, with all the forcing we've done in the past for Home and Garden Show.
That's my point. That's what I was going to say.
It's challenging because you're always fighting temperatures. You're fighting bugs or diseases. So what you guys have to create, it's incredible. Not to mention just the flowers you get to see and everything else and the butterflies. But it is so difficult to time everything perfect that, you know, I don't think people realize how great the Crone Conservatory is and what they go through.
It's a wonderful jewel
the people
in our own backyard.
Yes.
So tell me, when you procure the butterflies, how are they shipped? Are they in the chrysalis?
They're in the chrysalis state. So we're bypassing the egg stage and the caterpillar stage. Caterpillar stage is very messy and requires a lot of plant food. So once they go into the chrysalis, they might be in that state for 7 to 10 days, depending on the species. It's a perfect time for them to wrap them up. Mm-hmm. And it's so cool to see this happen. The boxes will come in and each one of the suppliers wraps them a little bit differently. And they put them in cotton or whatever they have to package them so that they don't bump around. And they're shipped usually overnight. We open the boxes in our quarantine room. And we're very careful to make sure that they're all sorted into tanks from each one of the suppliers.
Wow. Do you have to check their passports?
Pretty much so.
Sorry.
So they're coming in UPS, DHL, is that how it's done? FedEx? And
yes, yes. So the USDA only has, I only have a certain group of butterflies that are on my permits, and I have to go through and make sure that they're not accidentally sending me something that isn't under permit because I can't display that. And then they're also very concerned that when we open these boxes, along with the fact that we're getting butterflies from as far away as Ecuador or maybe Malaysia mm-hmm. or some other exotic land, when you open those boxes, we're real worried that potentially something else might be in there.
Sure.
So we're being cautious about that. We don't want to bring emerald ash borer or any other thing into this country. Mm-hmm. And so along with that, too, there are regulations about making sure that everything is disposed of in a way that does not impact our mm-hmm. environment. And so everything that comes out of the display itself needs to be frozen at minus 20 degrees for 72 hours before it can go into the waste stream.
Wow.
Or incinerated. And we've done both.
Wow. That's very interesting. Now, are the butterflies of Ecuador totally different than those from Morocco or other regions of the world? And what are these? When I'm looking at the photographs that you brought in, it looks like their wingspan, like you said, is a lot wider. So is that kind of like an indicator or one of the things you can tell?
Well, it's not always true.
Not always true?
I mean, there are some like itty-bitty little ones. This one that the Anna's 88 that we're featuring, that actually is a very small little butterfly. But it's so special looking. You can see on the back wings there mm-hmm. that how the marking on it is why they call it an 88. It's the one that we've put on the facade of the building because it's just so very specific to that region.
Yeah, it does. It looks like an 88.
Yes.
It's amazing how Mother Nature just gives these wonderful species such a unique look. And we're going to talk about that when we come out of the break. We have Andrea Shetman with us from the Crone Conservatory. And the Butterfly Show kicks off today. Is it at 10 o'clock? Is
10
that right?
10 a.m.
What a wonderful thing to get the kids involved with today if you're looking for something to do. And we're going to talk more about the Butterfly Show at the Crone when we come back. 749-B105, In and Around the House. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And we have our special guest in here with us this morning from the Crone Conservatory. It's Andrea Shetman. She is the director. And we're talking about the Butterfly Show, the Butterflies of Ecuador. And we were talking in a break. I wanted to ask you, like the monarch that we were so familiar with here in our area, how she will lay her eggs only on the milkweed, the Asclepias tuberosa. How do you manage to not allow this to happen with the species from Ecuador?
So by very careful planning, as we select the butterflies that we're going to display, we make sure that we find out what are their host plants, what are the plants that they would lay eggs on. And those plants are basically excluded from the plant list. It's frustrating sometimes. We have this wonderful collection of citrus trees mm-hmm. in the room, and a lot of the swallowtails lay eggs on citrus, unfortunately. So many of those really fascinating swallowtails, we can't even display them. So it's a very careful process of planning. As I said, you know, we have to work together as a team, the entomology team mm-hmm. and myself working with permits, all of us work together.
Very interesting. The blue morpho, I did see that one online, and it seemed like that's the one that everybody's shooting the photographs of because of the blue, and everyone loves blue. Is this butterfly special in any way? And what would it host on its when it's in the caterpillar stage?
So the blue morphos, actually, they raise it on peanuts, which is really interesting, but things that are related, mm-hmm. that some various legumes. So the blue morphos are a wonderful species for us for display because they will fly. They're a rainforest specimen, and they will fly even on overcast days. So typically, our butterfly show is best exhibited, or people best visited, on a very sunny day. Like today is going to be a perfect day. We're saying full sun, and it's going to be really active in there. Mm-hmm. But it helps us round out the display a little bit with these rainforest types. And these guys are so active when they're flying in the room. They're really good flyers, even in a contained space. They do these trails from front to back where they will chase anything that's blue and flying. And if you're wearing blue in that bright blue color, they'll literally kind of circle around you. And they're extremely active just before sundown. And so
interesting.
For some of our evening events, when people come, and we have a number of our Crone Grown-Up events and our Botany and Brews event, those will be great times for people to see that evening activity.
Is there any of the specific species or type of butterfly that you have that are going to be a little harder to find and people are going to have to really search and look to find them?
Yes. There's one that is very elusive and yet the coolest thing ever. I first saw these when I went to Costa Rica 20-some years ago, and we were taking a walk in the evening. And just before it got dark, I looked over at this bush and I saw it surrounded by these almost like little fairies flying around it. And as I looked closer, they were butterflies, and they call them glasswing butterflies.
Okay.
Their wings are completely transparent.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And so you really have to do a lot of looking in order to see those. Sometimes we'll keep a few in a tank so that you can really see them up close.
Because they can hide out, can't they?
So that's a whole camouflaged element of protection in Mother Nature.
Yes.
Yeah, and you can get to our Facebook page and see the cover or the pamphlet that we're talking about. It's been posted by Alex. Thank you, Alex, for doing that. But you can see the glass wing down on the bottom of that page. And wow, that is really neat.
And they're one of my favorite, especially since I had that up close experience with them.
Absolutely, because you only see the outside edges and kind of the veining through the wing.
So
it's really cool.
Is that what you call it? Is it called veining? Is that what it's called?
Okay, yes, they're veining. Yes, okay. It's correct enough. Yes.
Good enough. Okay, well, thank you.
What would be the host plant for this particular butterfly when it's in the larvae?
I don't know that off the top of my head, but of course we...
And I don't mean to put you on the spot. I think that's really neat because they're very specific about what they host on.
They really do.
It's interesting information.
What's the largest butterfly of all of them there?
Of all the ones that we have on display currently, it's going to be between the owl and the blue morpho.
Okay.
Those two. And this year we did these gold-banded, gold-bordered owls. We got some new ones in that we've never had before that are even bluer. And somebody posted a picture on our Facebook page of these. They were brand new to us, and they're even bluer on the top. And this broad gold band on the edge, they're gorgeous.
And how big would that be?
Well, almost as big as your hand.
Wow, that's huge.
Yes. And when they fly, some people are a little nervous about, it's like having a little flock of birds almost fly
up and
down.
They're not going to hurt you. Nothing's going to hurt you.
No, not at all.
Just let them land on you and let them hang out.
They don't have teeth.
That's
right. I always say there are no teeth.
No, they're just beautiful. Beautiful.
Now, I tell you one I think is really interesting here, too, is the green heliconian.
Yes.
I don't think I've ever seen a green butterfly.
Oh, we've had one called a malachite for many years, which is more kind of a blue-green. Right. It almost looks like stained glass, and those are quite beautiful.
Yeah.
This year, because I have this supplier down in Ecuador and who raises all these long-wing heliconius butterflies, we're hoping to exhibit quite a diversity of those types.
That is so cool. Now, are the chrysalis, are they all kind of unique and different in their own way?
Amazing, amazingly different. Everything from the ones, surprisingly, the blue morphos are this like almost translucent lime green. And then you get to some of the other ones that sparkle and shimmer like silver and gold. It's quite amazing. They vary in size depending on the size of the ultimate butterfly, the adult butterfly.
I'm amazed. I'm definitely going to get down there. And thank you for the tickets.
You're welcome.
Actually, you know what, Bob?
I have another question, though, real quick, if we got a second.
No, go ahead.
Before our break.
Yeah.
So the 88, the top side is one look, and the bottom side of the butterfly is different.
Yes.
Okay. Besides that one, and I want to talk about that one, are any of the other ones that way?
Almost all of them. And surprisingly, most of these, when their wings, the butterflies, they rest with their wings closed. Mm-hmm. So usually it's that underside that's going to have something on it that makes it either able to camouflage or something that might scare off a predator.
Gotcha.
So the owls, when they close, not only are they kind of dark and brown in color so they could easily camouflage, but they've got these giant eye spots on them that if something was looking to eat them, they would actually go for the spot where the eye spot is or be scared off by it.
Wow.
Rather than going for the front end of that butterfly.
Gotcha.
So
that's
it's
amazing.
A protection factor.
And get to Crone and see it for yourself, but also get to the Facebook page and just check it out, and then you'll want to go even more because the 88 is unbelievable. It's red on top and black on the bottom. It's just so cool.
Mother
how
Nature,
different
how she just takes care of herself in such a way is incredible. And if Bob, I always say this all the time, if I were able to go back to, well, I'm able to, but I'm not going to do it. If I was starting out in college today, I would have to get into entomology.
Oh, you would.
I love insects. Just a great thing. We got to take another quick break. And if you have a question for us, and by the way, I am going to thank you for the tickets. But if you are caller number 5, I am going to give away my 3 tickets to caller number 5. And if you have a question, please have a question for Andrea and what's going on at the Crone. And I'll just pay to get in to see this show. It's well worth it. And give us a call, 749-B105, caller number 5. I am going to leave my 3 tickets to the Butterfly Show for you. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And we have our special guest, Andrea Shetman, the director of the Crone Conservatory, with us. And we're talking about the Butterfly Show. The butterflies of Ecuador, and they're really cool, and they're totally different than what I've seen in the past. And before we go any further, Andrea, would you give us some information, your contact information at the Crone, and tell us just a little bit about the Friends of Crone program in a second, and then we'll get more in depth with it. But we want to talk with Bob Schaefer, too, before we go there. He's our winner of the 3 tickets for the Butterfly Show. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Well, I'm okay. How are you doing, Tony?
Doing well. Doing well. So just stop down here, hang out with us after we let you go on the phone, because you'll need to get with Alex. We'll get your information so you can come down and pick up your tickets, okay?
Well, I can't come down right now. I'm going to a bee conference for the next 6 hours.
No, we know. Okay. You can just pick them up any day throughout the week. And you're going to a bee conference?
Yes, sir.
All right. So where is that today?
This is at the Oasis out here in Loveland.
Got it. So
what time is that going on today?
It starts at 9 and goes through 3.
Cool. Is this for honeybees?
Yes, sir.
Got it, Tony.
You came out to Brown County on my invite.
Oh, okay. Yes, I do. Okay. I was telling Alex, I'm like, I'm familiar with that name. And yeah, I had a really great visit when I was there with you guys. Was that last summer?
Yes.
Yeah, and thank you again for the invitation. It's always fun to take that in, and you had a heck of a crowd.
We try.
Yeah. What did you have a question for Andrea by chance?
I asked the pollen plants that she talks about, are they good for the honeybees?
Yes. Yes. Also good for those. And native bees as well.
Yes.
Is it a local plant or
Some of the ones that we use for that are, but then we also have some really good, there's one called Guarania, and unfortunately that's a tropical plant, but you could grow it during the summer outside.
Okay.
I'll have to look that one up. I'm not familiar with it. Are you, Bob?
Nope.
Guarania?
No, I'm not.
Some of the Senecios, like, the Dusty Millers, I think, they will get a flower on them and they have good pollen on them, but most people don't grow them for that flower.
No, they grow them for the foliage.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Bob, keep us in the loop. Always good to hear from you. And hang in there with Alex. He's going to get some information from you. And when you get an opportunity, stop down here at 2060 Reading Road, and you can pick up the 3 tickets for the Butterfly Show.
All right, thank you.
And have a good show today at the bee meeting.
All right, thank you.
All right.
Hey, I'm going to just mention something else about the show. So if somebody didn't win tickets, you know, because they may have called in, I have a pair of tickets. Now, I only got 2. You got 3, so you're more special than I am. But I'm going to give away mine sometime in the show.
Got it.
I'm not going to tell people when. There'll be a queue, and I'll mention it, and that's when you call, so not yet. But if you don't win, you can also go to the Crone Conservatory and get $1 off admission, correct?
Yes.
There's a coupon right on the website.
Our webpage.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are part of Cincinnati Parks, and so cincinnatiparks.com,
right?
And you'll track it down to the Crone Conservatory site, and you can print out that $1 off coupon.
Yeah, I mean, just save a buck, but
perfect.
It's well worth the money. I'm like you. I it's worth paying for.
So
just give tickets away.
And you're
away,
supporting a good cause and a great place. Tell us a little bit about the Friends of Crone, that program.
Okay.
Is that still
in? Yes. Many years ago, a group of volunteers actually started this, and Kathy Moon had kept it going for many years, and she retired from her volunteer job of managing that a few years back, and it's moved over to me to take care of. But it's one of the best ways that if you think you're going to come to the Butterfly Show and the Holiday Show, by the time you come to both, you've spent the cost of a Friends of Crone membership.
Well, there you go. Are there other perks with the membership?
There are. For if you're interested in buying plants, when we have our end of show sales, the Friends of Crone, they will get in at 8:30. So you get to shop, you get to pick the best bargains early. And then we usually have a couple of events during the year where we invite our Friends of Crones at our patron and above level.
Oh, awesome. How fun.
Yeah, and kids get in for a little less than adults anyways, so that can save you a few bucks as well. So, you know, take advantage of some of those.
I always go to the holiday show because it always reminds me of going over there with my parents when I was a kid and seeing the live animals in the stable and all that good stuff. So, yeah, that's definitely well worth it.
For so many families, the Crone becomes a tradition.
Right.
We're finding that after all this time of Butterfly Shows, that this is a new tradition for a lot of families.
And 24 years is a long time to host a show. I mean, we've done the Home and Garden Show for 27, and it sometimes can get challenging to do something new, or you want to, you know, do it's different, but I mean, it's still butterflies, but I just encourage people not just to see the butterflies, even the flowers that you guys have. You know, there's so many out there that even we can use in the summer to help promote butterflies in our garden. You know, but what are some of the things that you're using in there people would recognize pretty easily?
So one of the big groups is the lantana, which we were talking about. One of my favorite flowers, many different colors. And these are great things for our outdoor gardens because the color and the blossoms are there from early in the season all the way into fall. So it's reliable nectar for anything moving through there for a long time.
Right.
Another maybe more, a little more exotic that's started coming into the industry recently are the pentas or Egyptian star. And my favorite are the bold reds and hot pinks.
Right.
Both of those are great nectar providers for
in our
garden.
Are there any color of flowers that are just better for attracting the butterflies?
The bolder the color, the better it is.
Okay, so the pastels, not as much.
Not
as much. The deeper, bolder colors are always better.
But then again, thinking about it, like if you have something that has multiple petals on top of each other, and it would be difficult for them to get down into to get to any nectar source, or if it's highly hybridized, some of the newer, like roses, things like that, there are times when there's really little to no nectar inside of those. And they go for more flat top flowers that they can sit on so they can sit, keep their feet dry while they're
And that's where
eating.
The lantana are so good because there's so much flower on top.
Incredible.
They can land all over.
It's a huge attractor. You know, something I want to ask you, The buddleia, the butterfly bush, is that a good source of nectar for our butterflies?
It's a great source of nectar.
I mean, it definitely attracts them.
It often is confused. You were talking before about the monarchs and the asclepias.
The asclepias, right.
Some people get those two confused because of the butterfly connotation, but it's a great nectar provider.
So would you encourage homeowners to have things like that out in a landscape amongst some of the other host plants and these other ones we're talking about, like the lantana, cosmos, things of that sort, the pentas?
We talked about the host plants and how we can't have those in the show,
mm-hmm.
but in the outside gardens around Crone, we have this fabulous, fabulous gardener, Jenny Cullen, who is planting all the things that you can get ideas for your own home backyard garden. And a lot of those things kind of coexist. You can do a beautiful garden that has a combination
mm-hmm.
of maybe a host plant that might not be as spectacular and a really pretty bloomer that's going to provide nectar.
Right.
And all of those things together make for a wonderful garden.
You know, I know they love parsley. Rue mm-hmm. is another good host plant. Mm-hmm. Dill. A lot of our herbs, actually.
Yeah, surprisingly, people don't think about those. They think of flowers only.
Right.
But where those can really do
you
a good
need the
job
host plants.
Well.
It was one afternoon, I was walking through the garden center, and I saw all these caterpillars on the parsley. I'm like, and I knew what they were.
Right.
But the customer doesn't. And surely enough, they'll say, oh, yeah, they got caterpillars and bugs on their plants. But it was the, if I'm not mistaken, one of the swallowtails.
Yes, the black swallowtail.
The black swallowtail. And I can't remember which one it was. If it was the flat leaf or the curly. It preferred one over the other.
It's funny because sometimes in year to year, it may be slight preferences for one or the
okay.
other.
Gotcha. Okay.
And it'll change?
It will change. Huh. I'll find in my garden that one year, all of a sudden, they're showing a preference for one variety over the other. And so I just always make sure to grow them both.
Yeah. And the girls in the design room, what they did, they kept them and then they put them in like a small aquarium.
Yeah.
And before long, after a couple of instar stages, there it was, the chrysalis. And next year they hatched. They came out, you know, the metamorphosis part of the whole changeover.
It was all there. Huh?
That's great.
It was.
That's
really
cool.
It was really neat. And I think for kids to see something like that's even better.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of kids, you know, in case you have them, or if you don't, but I'm going to go ahead and give away my two tickets to the butterfly show as well.
Don't feel,
since you showed me up.
Don't feel pressured, you know. Don't feel pressured.
You always got to one-up me. You're a one-upper, aren't you, Tony?
No, you were the one-upper.
No. So, but let's go with caller number five as well. You did caller number five. So whoever calls in can get a pair of tickets to the butterfly show. And we highly encourage that you take people and you go see it. Families, generations, doesn't matter. Go see it. So this is your cue to call, 749-B105. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. We're still with our special guest, Andrea Shetman, the director of the Crone Conservatory. And we've been talking everything butterflies. And while we were in the break, Bob was asking some really interesting questions about creating that backyard habitat if, in fact, you want to do something of the sort. And you can easily do that by going out and visiting with your local garden centers and nurseries and picking up these plants that are nectar plants that attract our butterflies. And we also need those host plants, obviously. We all know that, for them to stick around. And also, we're going to talk about how you can create or establish yourself as a certified way station. Because if I'm not mistaken, I believe, Andrea, that the Crone Conservatory is a certified way station
yes.
for our local butterflies in the monarch, correct?
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about that and the habitats that we can create in our own backyards.
Okay. So if you come to Crone, we have this wonderful outdoor garden. And strangely enough, it was sponsored by Scherzinger Pest Control. And they have been an absolutely wonderful supporter of Crone. They've helped us in so many ways, from learning about biological control to supporting this garden. You can go through the garden and learn about all the things that you can do in your own backyard and how you pull butterflies in. Many of the things that we can't show in the interior exhibit because of regulatory things, you're going to be able to see where those host plants are growing side by side with nectar plants and how you can create that environment. Ideally, a butterfly garden is going to be in a full sun location, because the butterflies will be more active there. Your nectar plants will continue to bloom. A small little water source, and we talked about this before, either a puddling area, because butterflies like to sit in a space that maybe they're not fully getting their feet wet. They like their feet to be dry, but they need a source of moisture, and often minerals come from those little puddling spaces. And then along with that as well, you want to make sure that this is a pesticide-free environment, that you're not spraying for anything. And your host plants that you choose will have a great impact on what butterflies you're able to draw into that garden.
And that's where going back to the plant selection is really important, because if you use Lantana, there's not a lot of issues with it. So pick plants that are easy to take care of so you don't have to worry about any pests.
So, and also having things that are in bloom from the beginning of the season to the end of the season. And we have a lot of different kinds of milkweed, and some of those milkweeds are local milkweeds that are great for egg laying. In addition to that, you will see that Curassavica, Asclepias curassavica, which is a tropical milkweed. It is a fabulous nectar provider and a great bloomer, but we try to make sure that when those monarchs are supposed to be migrating, that we remove that so that they aren't encouraged to stay any longer. They need to move on their way and head on south.
Right. I've heard that before. So that's the tropical version of the milkweed. Got it.
And what time do we start? Like, what time around Cincinnati typically do you start seeing a lot of these butterflies showing up?
Well, of course, the season and when it starts getting warm. And for all we know in Cincinnati, tomorrow could be a blast of heat or a blast of snow. But usually, you know, if you think about the Mother's Day season, when you all are selling a lot of things in the garden store and it's starting to get warm outside, some of the early things, I think it's the red spotted purple that's maybe one of the first ones to come out of hibernation. And we were talking before about in this area, some of the butterflies will overwinter either in diapause as an egg stage, a caterpillar stage, or even as an adult. And that's where these little wood piles or the little fancy butterfly houses can be a nice addition for your space.
Will the adults show up a lot sooner since they're already there?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, is the do you remember the show The Flight of the Butterflies?
Yes. Actually, I have a copy of it. It was amazing.
I wish that I had a copy of it. And I don't know if you can go out on Netflix and pick that up or not. I'm sure you can.
I'm sure it's somewhere.
That was one of the – that show – That documentary, I saw it at the OmniMax. It really moved me at the end, especially, and I just thought that was so
the same
incredible.
Way.
I was like numb. I was like, that is so awesome.
I find scientific discovery today, it's so amazing to think that these things, as many things like archaeology and butterflies, that we're just discovering them today.
Yeah, is it Dr. Fred Urquhart? Is that how you say his name?
The one that was in the movie who started that? I believe so, yeah.
He spent 40 years researching the monarch and finding out where the monarch goes down in Mexico. Is he still alive?
I do not know. I would like to know that. I actually would love to meet him someday.
But that is one documentary, and that would be a great person to meet. But that is one documentary. It's a must see.
You go, I just looked it up real fast because you put it up there, and looks like there's all kinds of places to find it. So it looks like you can still find it and see
that's
it.
That's awesome. It would be nice if the museum center would kind of bring that back and coordinate that with your guys' show.
When it first came out, we did a lot of coordinated effort
and
worked together on promotion, both at Crone in there. And it's a great one.
Hopefully we can do that again, because that's one I know that a lot of people didn't see it that would really love to see that. But I just had to ask you.
I think you can find it moved. Many places. Yeah. I mean, Amazon Prime, at least it's showing it has it. So,
but anyway, you know, nothing like seeing it at the OmniMax.
No, that's cool.
Yeah, that was
and apparently
really cool.
They redid all that too. I want to get down there and see that.
Yeah. So hold on to that thought. We have to take another quick break. And when we come back out of the break, tell us about the tree and the nut we're going to talk about. What is it? Give
it
us a teaser.
The Tagua.
749-B105, In and Around the House with Tony Works. We'll be right back. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. Little Johnny Cash there. You got to like that.
I was dancing. It's been funny in the studio today. You didn't see it, but last segment, my mic all of a sudden just dropped all the way to the table.
No, I did not see that.
I picked it up, and it just dropped to the table. And then I sat in the chair couple segments ago, and it went all the way to the floor. So I don't know what's going on around here.
You have to tighten that up, Bob.
And my other mic, my first mic that I started with at the beginning of the show, there's something wrong with it. So obviously, don't come near me today. There's something going on.
We'll stay away. We'll stay away. And before we went into the break, our good friend Andrea Shepman, she's a director of the Crone Conservatory, she introduced and just kind of teased you with a particular type of tree, and she brought in this interesting nut that this tree produces. Tell us a little bit about it and where it's native to.
Okay, so there's a tree that is in the Ecuadorian region and a rainforest tree. It has this seed that grows or nut that when you take it out and polish it and dry it, it is so hard that it is like a source of ivory. So they call it vegetable ivory. And the Ecuadorian people have learned to make a very sustainable crop out of this and craft. And there are many jewelries and buttons and other things that are made out of it. And because it's so wonderful that then you don't have to take the tusk of some animal and kill it, that we think that tagua is just a wonderful, wonderful plant. We're having a jewelry making class, one of our Crone grown-up classes coming up. And these are after hours, adults only. Sign up. You can have a glass of wine while you make jewelry. And we're going to teach people how to make jewelry out of this tagua nut.
Well, how fun is that? I like that. It almost looks like a stone, like a polished stone.
I thought it was when she brought it in.
Yeah.
So we'll get a picture up on Facebook.
The tagua tree. Did you say it was a tree or a shrub? I'm sorry.
It's a tree.
It's a tree.
A very large tree.
Very large tree, tall growing tree. I'm thinking. So that's really, really interesting. It almost looks like a stone. It's very, very smooth too.
You might want to look at, if you can look it up online there and maybe post the picture. The outer casing of it is big and brown and kind of breaks away to leave the seed that comes from inside of it.
That's awesome.
It really is cool. I mean, and Alex is getting ready to get kind of post something on the Facebook page so that people can see it. But you brought it in and I grabbed it. It's smooth. It's you know, I thought it was a stone. I'm like, oh, she brought a rock.
I did too. I thought she was going to do some kind of trick with
nut.
It. Like if you lay it, you know, you write it up on its end, and if it falls over left, it means this. Or if it falls over right, it means that. I really wasn't sure. But
right,
really...
if you want to look it up yourself, it's T-A-G-U-A.
Yes.
Tagua.
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 Okay.
So
not toga, tagua, right?
Not toga.
Not toga,
or vegetable ivory is another
vegetable
name
ivory.
That they
okay.
call it. There have been a lot of people wearing the necklaces.
Uh-huh.
You'll see these necklaces. It can be dyed, the color that they dye it. It can be bright colors. And when it's cut in little flat pieces, it makes a wonderful item for jewelry.
How fun. That sounds really neat. And that's for adults. When is that class, by the way?
That class is coming up. We've got three different classes that are coming up that are Crone grown-ups. And the first one is a jewelry making with Ecuadorian other products of the rainforest, like acai, and we have citrus peels. And then that one is on April 3rd. Then on Wednesday, April 10th, is the one that is the tagua. And then the week after that, April 17th, is watercolor butterflies.
Awesome. Well, before we let you go, thank you for joining us. It's always a pleasure. And I will definitely get down there now that I have my membership pin. Thank you, by the way. And give us your contact information. Tell us again how long the show runs for. And we'll get down there and we'll visit with you.
So you can look us up on CincinnatiParks.com, which is our webpage. Of course, join us on Facebook, also through our Cincinnati Parks Facebook and social media sites. And just come down and join us at Crone.
Awesome. Andre, have a great weekend. Have a great day today, kicking off the butterfly show at the Crone Conservatory. Butterflies of Ecuador. It's a great thing that you can get the kids out to today, that's for sure. With the sun shining, they'll
be
active,
great.
Right?
It's going to be a great day. And 11 o'clock is our butterfly release. So if you can get there by 11, you'll get to see new ones being released into the display.
All right. Have a great weekend. 749-B105, in and around the house. Bob and I have to take another quick break, and we'll be right back. Morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And that was a great interview. Always a pleasure to have Andrea Shepman in with us. She's the director of the Crone Conservatory. And if you're looking outside, there's not a cloud in the sky, and it's nothing but sunshine, sunshine, sunshine.
Here comes the sun.
There you go.
Do, 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 do.
Don't quit your daytime job.
No,
there,
people
Barley.
Do not want to hear me sing.
No. And real quick, with today's weather, with this sunshine, get out to the local garden centers and nurseries to see what's arriving, what's new, check out some of the color that's there with the pansies and the violas and so forth. And then also, after you do that, get over to the Crone and kick that off at 11 o'clock. That's the release. And
I wish I wasn't going to work today because I would love to see that. That would be cool.
I know. And yesterday we could have gone down for media day, but I was so busy I couldn't get away from the place.
Yeah, and
those
Andrea
are fun things to do.
So knowledgeable.
Yes, she is.
About not just this, which is why we had her in, but I mean the information that that young lady has is just unbelievable.
But that's why she's in that position, and
she's good.
We're not.
We're going to have to. Well, I don't deserve to be in that position. But it would be great. I mean, we could have her in just to talk about, you know, nectar and pollen plants and everything. I mean, that's a whole show you and I could talk about.
That is one of the things that I really I consider priceless about those that we work alongside with in our industry here in the tri-state area.
Mm-hmm.
People like Andrea, and you know, you take Jim Montag, and I'm. Everybody that's in the green industry here, there's a wealth of information. You know, it's incredible.
You know, we always talk about needing vacation time. You know, we got to go somewhere. You know, there's so many, and I know it is mm-hmm. nice to get away. You know, like, you know, you were going on the Bourbon Trail, and, you know, you even posted another picture on the Facebook page.
The Bernheim Arboretum.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so many things, you know, that's here and close to us.
Mm-hmm.
Spring Grove Cemetery. Yeah. The Boone County Arboretum, yep. Just a lot of stuff. And I know I'm leaving others out, and it's just not coming to...
Just because it's not coming to our mind. But yeah, I mean, Cincinnati is a great place. And then to have the Crone, you know, and then not to mention the zoo. I mean, the zoo,
yeah,
what
Cincinnati
they do.
Zoo. There you go.
I mean, they do
the botanical
so much.
Gardens.
Uh-huh.
Steve Foltz, Scott Byerline, those guys do a great job. And certainly take it in. These are the things you can get kids involved with.
Absolutely.
You know, get them off the phone. Get them off the computer. Get them outside.
I mean, we're not planting flowers yet, obviously. It's a little early. You know, you can do pansies and stuff. But you know, we're going to be doing, and we've got shows coming up. You've already been working on shows and topics that I really can't wait to get to. It's going to be so much fun. And I really hope the listening audience, you know, helps us share the information. Get it out. Tell their friends, hey, listen to Bob and Tony. You know, get on there and.
No. Listen to Tony and Bob.
All right.
Now,
whatever.
See, there you go. Try to one up me again.
I did try to, Alex. That's because you threw me under the bus like
Alex,
three times already.
Put him
today.
On hold, will you? I'm going to go there and work him over.
Put his mic down a little bit.
But, hey, what did you say? You were out last week. What happened to your neighbor?
So, that crazy windstorm last Thursday, a few days later, he showed me a picture and his blue spruce in his front lawn. I guess the winds was so bad. It blew it over, and it took the entire,
root ball?
Mm-hmm. It took the entire root ball out of the ground, and it was laying on its side on his front lawn. And what he did was he actually propped it back up and put it back in the ground. But I want to know, will the tree survive?
Well, it's funny. You brought the question up, and it brought back to mind, I had a good friend of mine when the tornadoes came through Piner. So... He was out on Piner. He's on a farm, and he's kind of up on a hill, and I'd done his landscaping. So this blue spruce was a fat Albert. It was probably 15 to 18 foot tall. So it was a big, mature tree.
Mm-hmm.
And the windstorm took off the whole side of his house, and on that side of the house was the blue spruce, which at the time then was on more than a 45-degree angle, shooting straight out towards his driveway. And it was a beautiful tree, and he's like, what do I do? I'm like... So I went and looked at it, and the root ball was pretty much intact.
Still
it had just ripped the soil and everything, and it had most of it left. So what we did is we took a ratchet strap so we didn't tear up the bark, and we pulled the tree back up. We took fence post, drove it into the ground, and we put ratchet straps on the tree, and every so often he would tighten it up. That tree's still there today, and it's perfect.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's just one of those things, you know, Alex, you can tell your neighbor as well. It's a wait and see.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, you know, you might get away with trying to aid and help out, just like Bob was describing. And then sometimes it's like, well,
if the tree's too big, it's just not going to happen. So it depends on how tall his tree is.
Well, that was a big tree.
Well, it was 18 feet.
Yeah, yours was big.
He planted the tree when his son was born. Now his son is 25, so it's a 25-year-old tree.
Now, if he's listening or if you talk to him, you got to treat that like a brand new plant. So what I did for my buddy was I got some root stimulator.
Right.
and we put some root stimulator on it. I have got some fertilizer that we also treated on top as like a topical so it could just soak down through. And then I also had him water it every other day for a couple weeks. And then and I kind of weaned it off. So I treated it almost like a brand new large plant, really large. So it was deep root watering. It wasn't every other day. It was about once a week, I should say, on the watering. But it was heavy.
Well, what was really a benefit right there, obviously, as it tilted and tipped, you know, went on its side, that a lot of that root ball was still intact.
Yes,
and
he was lucky.
Rip away in terror.
I've seen the other way, though, where it just rips the roots out.
Right.
Tree's toast. Sometimes you just got to take a chainsaw to it and cut it down. He'll know in about 3 to 4 weeks, probably, because if it's tore up and the root's too bad, maybe not 3 or 4 weeks. Maybe about 8 to 12 weeks. He'll start to see some damage.
So if it is damaged, then the tree will just die down.
It could potentially die out.
Then
yes.
You got to get rid of it.
It'll become
so
stressed.
So what's the potential of the roots actually healing itself? I mean, the roots
if they're still there intact, they'll root back in.
Do you remember when you looked at it? Did it have a lot of dirt on the roots, or were the just roots bare?
It looked bare.
He's probably in trouble.
It looked bare.
My buddies had a lot of, you could see the roots, but the soil was
still
with
attached
it.
To it. Yeah.
No.
And so there was a lot of soil, so we put it back in place, and it worked out okay.
It's a wait and see, Alex. That's unfortunately all we can do at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, that would be a good question for Ron Rothaus, too. It's interesting how you pulled that off.
I got lucky.
You know what? It happens.
I would tell your buddy it's worth a try. If he pulled it back up and got it straight, stake it, water it.
Nothing to lose.
Make sure there's some soil around the roots. He doesn't want the roots exposed. So you're going to have to kind of repack it in and treat it like a brand new plant. Plants are resilient. I mean, plants in general are really tough.
They want to
and
grow.
Resilient.
They want to grow.
They want to grow. And they want. And I mean, you look outside the studio, we got some pines that are kind of rough looking. Well, they're rough looking because they're in the shade kind of mixed in with other trees, and that's not an easy place to grow. But guess what? They're still fighting. They're still out there fighting.
You'll be amazed. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, when you coddle something and you're like looking after it after every moment or after every...
Like I do with you on this show.
Yeah, right. That's it's always like, go figure. That's when things don't work out, and whenever you just turn your head to something and abuse it and leave it, let it go, then there you are.
Well, we got a few minutes left of the show. Tony, what do people need to do? I mean, if I'm coming to the garden center and, you know, I'm looking at you and say, hey, what do I need to do to take care of my place? It's going to be nice today. I want to work outside.
And, what I want you to do is think about the Fertilume 3-Step Program. That's first and foremost. Secondly, I want you to start thinking about your landscape beds. And when we talk about that, we're talking about the product that's like Preen, but it's high yields version of Preen, turf and ornamental, weed and grass stopper with Dimension. That's a great way to protect your landscape beds and keep all those pesky weeds from invading and getting in there. And you'll do that a couple of times throughout the season. You get about 4 months out of that product. I'm looking at that. I'm looking at starting to clean up the landscape beds, loosen the mulch up, prune back your rose bushes. Now's a good time to do that. Apply the systemic drench to your rose bushes to keep the rose slugs off. Boy, there's just all kinds of things. I can keep going and going and going.
But
those are on the top of my list. Mm-hmm. For those who have yet to have their power equipment serviced, your lawnmower serviced, the blades sharpened, that's very, very important. Try and get that done as soon as possible. You might be waiting a little longer than normal because we've been putting it off a little bit. But those are some of the things I'm encouraging people to do.
And it's a little cold right now.
Yeah.
You know, out there, it's a beautiful day. You look outside and you just see it's beautiful. Bad. It's still 29 degrees right now this morning because the sun's just getting up. But today's supposed to be 55 degrees.
But at 50, 55, it's not too hot. You're not going to break a huge sweat.
Nope.
And it's comfortable to do some of those really active kind of chores, you know, loosening up the mulch, raking up some of the debris that's in the lawn.
There are some weeds to pull already because you got henbit and bittercress.
I've seen some purple dead nettle blooming already.
I haven't seen that yet, but wow. I mean, if you have some of that henbit and bittercress, you want to get it before the seed pods germinate.
Well, and that's one
off.
Of those, Bob's talking about those winter annual weeds, and those are the guys that drop their seed in the spring, and then it gets really warm throughout the summer months, and those winter annual weeds will die off. But all that seed is left behind, so you can combat that a couple of ways. I like to go after it with an herbicide. And I like to do that selectively in such a way to where I can get rid of those guys, and then therefore they're not going to be capable of dropping seed. Or another approach is let them wane off, die off in the summer months, and put down a pre-emergent later in the year in your landscape beds, and you'll keep those winter annual weeds out of there.
Well, and the key is to try to get them early, because it's the bitter crest that's the kind of the white that you kind of step on, and you see seed pods fly.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll know what I'm talking about, because they're all over.
They'll just launch out. You know, that's when deer walk through your yard. They brush up against the bitter crest, and that's how all that seed gets dispersed. You know,
I've had some of those issues last year. Because remember last year I didn't put my pre-emergent down like I was supposed to in my beds, and my bitter crest went berserk.
I'm pretty clean. And I got things to clean up, but for the most part, you'll save yourself a lot of time, and you can hang out with your buddies later in the day, and you're not spending all your time pulling weeds.
See, you're a real good gardener with that. I'm like the average guy who doesn't get the things as much as they should. I'm like the normal gardener. You're above average.
No.
Yes, you are.
I'm the painter whose house needs to be painted.
Don't believe him. That? All the listeners don't believe Tony. His place always looks great.
Nope.
I'll get a picture of it.
My
this summer.
Backyard was a wreck for a long time. It used to look really good, and it's now I still have more work to do. You were talking to Alex about that windstorm the other day.
Yeah. Well, you got your tree hanging from your other tree.
Yeah.
I'm
gonna meet
week.
My tree guy. It's going to tell me how he's going to cut it out. So I had to do that this morning.
Well, I'm gonna show you up, because that's what we do around here. We kind of tease each other, and it's all in good fun. It's never being mean. But your yard is always looking great. Every time I go by, it looks great.
It's okay. Thank you for the nice compliment.
Yeah, you do.
It's don't. There used to be a neighbor up the street who would come in. Bless her heart. She's now deceased, and would always tell my dad, "You know, your son works at a flower place, and he doesn't have a lot of flowers in the front of his yard. That's because it's kind of shady.
It's very shady.
Yeah.
But your yard always looks nice. I mean, every time I drive by,
they're all in the
back
where it's sunny. All right, I just want to conclude our show this morning. Thanks for joining us, and I hope that you were able to pick up the interview with Andrea Shetman again. The Butterfly Show kicks off at the Chrome Conservatory today, and Bob and I will see you next Saturday. Have a great afternoon.